is Saturday, July 22nd, and it is episode 65 of The Main Event. Ryan Jarrell and Brian Stackpole here. Tonight we got some big fights, Brian. We have UFC on Fox 25, headlined by Chris Weidman and Kelvin Gastelum. On that main card is Jimmy Rivera, a 20-1 bantamweight, and he is on the show today. We're going to talk to him about that huge fight he has against Thomas Almeida and really talk about his fighting future and see how long it's going to be until he finally makes that step and holds a belt around his waist one day very soon.
I don't imagine it'll take very long because this is a guy who beat Uriah Faber his last time out in September, and I think he is gunning for Cody Garbrandt's gold one day. But again, Thomas Almeida's in his way, and we'll talk about that and who he wants to face after Almeida here coming up.
Yeah, look forward to that. Also, next Saturday is the huge UFC 214 pay-per-view, one of the best cards of the year. Actually, one of the best cards in recent memory. It's really an amazing card, top to bottom. We have the senior editor of Flow Sports, Dwayne Finley, is here, and he is going to be previewing that with us, so we'll break that down head to toe and dive into that. Also, Bellator 181 winner, the Junkyard Dog, Jonathan Gary, is joining us back on The Main Event. So we're excited to talk to him. One of our most interesting and exciting guests we've had ever on the show.
Yeah, he's a wrestling fan too, so you know we're going to have to ask him a question or two about that.
Well, that's definitely, I'm going to defer to you in that department because you are the expert in the wrestling for sure.
Yeah, anyone who has his nickname based after the Junkyard Dog, the pro wrestler, is good in my book. So again, Jonathan Gary will be a fun interview coming up later on today, too.
Another great show, as always. So much exciting stuff to talk about in the summer. Every summer, really, MMA is just, you know, we've talked about this before when football hasn't started up yet, basketball is done. Right now, MMA really does a good job of capitalizing on that time where there's not a whole lot of other sports going on, and they're putting some monster shows together.
Yeah, and this is the perfect time to do so. You're not competing with football, of course, or college football, which you would do during the fall. In the wintertime, sometimes you can, but then there's basketball, there's other things, there's college basketball, the March Madness tournament, and all that. So this is really where you're just competing with baseball, and with so many freaking games all the time with baseball, 162 for each team. You don't need to watch every game.
Exactly.
That's why you can sit down on a Saturday night, you can sit down on a Sunday afternoon occasionally when they do these overseas cards, and you can go and watch some UFC, or you can watch the Bellator on Friday nights, or you can watch some of these more regional promotions like on Flow Combat. You can watch some of the great cards they have on the weekend too if you have the subscription service, because this is the time of the year you can really devote to combat sports, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I have recently made the purchase to have UFC Fight Pass. Dana White has his new show. We've talked about that, Tuesday Night Contender Series.
I was about to say Tuesday nights now, too, you can carve out.
It's fantastic. There's just so many MMA matchups and shows available to you on a consistent basis now, and that gets me excited. And obviously, we got this big card tonight, headlined by Weidman and Gastelum. I was watching the weigh-ins earlier this morning, and it's
now which weigh-in though, because you actually have to differentiate the weigh-ins now. Is it the legit weigh-ins or is it the show weigh-ins?
No, I was watching the legit weigh-ins afterwards, and the size difference between Weidman and Gastelum, I guess I forgot how short Gastelum is. But when you see them next to one another, you're like, geez, I guess there's a reason why Gastelum was fighting at 170, but you know, at 185 it's not hard for him to make that cut. I don't think he really has to cut much at all. I think he walks around close to that anyways.
Let's hope he doesn't miss this cut.
Then that's a problem.
Yeah.
But I'm really interested about this fight. We've talked about it before, too, because for Chris Weidman, he's already lost, is it three in a row now?
Right.
And if he loses his fourth straight fight in a row in the UFC, what will they do with him? I can't imagine them actually cutting him from the roster. But, you know, that you've seen that happen before. It doesn't really matter, I guess, what your pedigree is or what you've done historically. I mean, he's a former champ. He beat the Spider twice. I just can't imagine him being cut. But if he loses here, what do they do with him?
Well, maybe you give him Anderson Silva again. We talked about this the last time.
Yeah.
He does not become a contender anymore. He becomes a show fighter. He becomes not necessarily a prize fighter because he would have lost, what, four straight at that point? But he becomes a guy who's a draw, but just a draw. He's not a guy who's going to be contending unless he starts to rattle off the wins again.
Right.
And this would also be another fight where he literally has to be able to just walk down the street to get from his home into the Coliseum tonight. That's all he has to do. He could just literally walk there.
Now,
if he loses this one, that is going to be a giant sign that he is his prime is definitely well past.
Maybe what he would need to do, and this might be tough, but cut ties with where he's training right now, and maybe go to a different gym, maybe shake things up a little bit, get a different approach from, you know, I know he's been with the same team for a while now.
Right.
Maybe that's something that you do. I mean,
well, I think he's with Sarah's camp, isn't he? Isn't it Longo Sarah?
Yeah, he's been there for a long time. Ray Longo has been his head coach for a while now, but that's like, you know, his area where he's from, and I know he's loyal, but there's a lot of other great teachers and coaches out there that can kind of come at you from different angles and be like, well, you know, they can tweak different parts of your game. Imagine if you went down and trained with the, you know, Greg Jackson's camp down there. I mean, who knows? That could resurrect his career.
But again, look at who he's fought.
He's fought the best of the best.
He lost in the fourth round to Rockhold. Mm-hmm. For a title shot, actually defending his title. He lost it to Rockhold. Then he lost a decision to Yoel Romero. Actually, not. It was in the third round, so he still had gone pretty far deep into that contest at that point, and then finally lost to Gregard Mousasi. So it's not like he's been losing to, like, you or I. He's been losing to some of the best in the division.
Well,
it's
that's
just
only because he hasn't fought us, Brian.
It's also because he went 13-0 prior to that one, so hopefully he can right the ship. I think a loss for Gastelum doesn't hurt him as much because it is Chris Weidman, for goodness sake. But if he does win, then that starts to get him in the conversation about maybe a couple more wins, he could be in the title contention.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you're talking about Weidman's, who he's fought, his competition. Again, it's the best of the best, and I truly believe that, you know, a different move here, a different decision here, you know, as far as, you know, whether he goes for a clinch or whatever. I mean, he ran into that knee from Romero. You just never know how these fights can shake out. I mean, I think that if Weidman, you know, had a chance to fight Luke Rockhold again or Romero again, who knows? It could turn out differently. I think Weidman is that good. That's why this is so crazy to me, is that this is actually what a lot of MMA media members are talking about. What are they going to do with Chris Weidman? For crying out loud, he's the former champion. You keep him in the UFC and you do something different with him. Maybe you have him go up to light heavyweight and have a couple fights up there. I mean, that's not a bad idea. That actually division is kind of thin right now, if you think about it, outside of the top guys and Cormier and Jones and Gustafson and Ozdemir and Jimmy Manoa. Who else? I mean, I think Weidman could beat Corey Anderson, and Corey Anderson's like ranked, what, 7th or 8th in the light heavyweight
division? Yeah, but the problem with that, though, is if you can't do it at one level, why move up?
Well, that's what Gastelum's done. That's what so many guys
do. But Gastelum did that more because he couldn't make weight, right?
That is true, but you've also seen historically a lot of fighters too, you know, like Anthony Pettis, you know he went up, then he went down, then he went back up, and you do see guys go up weight classes because they're like, well, I'm getting older. Like Cowboy Cerrone, for example, he couldn't get over that mountaintop at 155, and now he's fighting at 70,
right?
You know, so
which I think was better for him because he knew he couldn't beat the best of the best at 155. He had gotten to the top and he had lost again. He lost when the bright lights were shining on him, unfortunately for him, and now he's moving up, and I think it was a better choice for him. But
if you play devil's advocate there, you know, if you can't beat the best at 155, what makes you think you're going to be able to beat the best at 170? Because they're, you think, theoretically bigger and stronger and everything.
And that's my whole point. Why would you want to go up where you don't have that competitive advantage? I would almost say if he could do it, which I'm not sure he can, would be to try to cut to go down a weight class where you'd have even more theoretically of an advantage. But again, at his age, it's going to be more of a weight cut. It's going to be more difficult. So there's pros and cons too. If he does lose tonight, which I hope he doesn't, I still think there are ways to market him, and he's still a fighter that can draw. I just think you have to do it properly. You have to do it either with a young up-and-coming star where he now becomes a gateway fighter, or maybe try to bring out like the Spider. Maybe have Silva and say, wow, they did it before. It was such a great fight. We're going to bring it out, and hopefully Silva doesn't wrap his shin around his leg again.
I don't think anybody could bear to see that again. That was so gruesome. I remember when that first happened.
I watched it live.
Oh, my. I was too. I watched it live, and I was like, what is that? Did I just see what just happened? And to actually see the replay, I remember like turning around and being like, no, no. Wait. If that doesn't scare you away from being a mixed martial artist, I don't know what would.
It was like, did Gumby put on an Anderson Silva mask and then just decided to do a leg kick? Like,
no,
geez.
Chris Weidman, I hurt my feet times. I kicked myself right in the leg and go boom.
So if you were picking this one, this isn't going to go against our official selections here because you'll hold the title belt until at least 214. Would you go Weidman on this one? You're going to pick Gastelum,
you know,
if you had to go.
I think I would. And let me tell you this. I have the utmost respect for Kelvin Gastelum. I remember watching him in The Ultimate Father, on The Ultimate Fighter. Can you imagine?
Call
that's
Dana.
The, show.
Call
yeah, the
Dana.
Ultimate Father.
We're going to make him rich. The Ultimate Father.
But what I was going to say was I remember watching him on The Ultimate Fighter with my father. And my father was unbelievably impressed. And he's like, this guy's going to win the show. This guy, nobody's going to beat this guy. And he saw in Gastelum what clearly Gastelum, his potential was, because what he's done in the UFC, take away the weight missing issues and all that stuff, but this guy is legit. His wrestling is unbelievable. He's got great power. I think he's going to be around for a long time. He's only 25 years old. I think this fight is crucial to Chris Weidman's career. Yep. It's in his backyard. If he doesn't come out looking like the Chris Weidman of old and looking to put on a show and get this win, then there's serious issues there. So I would go with Weidman.
Yep, same here. And by the way, our fathers, too, are the ultimate fathers. Just want to put that out there.
Love you, Dad.
I also want to just touch on here quickly on this card. There's a lot of New York, New Jersey fighters here, which I absolutely love. Vellante is going to be part of it. Jimmy Rivera trains out of New Jersey, and we'll talk about that being close to home, basically, for this fight once again for him. Lyman Good, I'm hearing a lot about. He actually trains with Jimmy Rivera, too, in the same gym, and they're saying he could be the next big thing in his division as well. So, whoa, hello. Hello, Windows Update. But does that appeal to you where you have fighters, much like we saw here in Bangor, Tim Boach, a main fighter, fighting in front of a very, very pro crowd? Does that give you a little bit more of an interest in this fight card?
Well, I mean, maybe not for me personally, because I just want to see the fights, but for the fighters and their families and everything, absolutely, because that's really what it's all about. You'd like to be able to compete in front of the people that support you and love you. So for them, yes. For me, it doesn't really matter. I just want to see everyone get in there and bang.
See, for me, it does. You know why? Because it makes it more emotional. It builds that storyline. And two, a lot about sports is it's a diversion from everyday life, and it's theater. People might say, well, sports, no, it's athleticism, it's people going out there and competing. Well, it's also theater. The storylines that have been developed over the years from some of these characters, who that's what they are. These athletes become characters, whether you're talking about basketball, baseball, MMA, that's what they become. So I feel like it gives it a new added wrinkle. It gives them a little bit more character development, so to speak. They're fighting in front of a home crowd.
I can totally see that. I mean, they used to do that with GSP when he was still fighting, you know, fighting up in Canada and whatnot, and the fans would go nuts when he comes out. Same thing, Jose Aldo in Brazil. And, you know, it definitely adds that to it when you hear the crowd go nuts. But, you know, I guess my thought process of it is every time, these guys are warriors, you know what I mean? They're like modern day gladiators. And anytime that they strap on the gear, the Reebok gear, and they put on the gloves and their cup and their mouthpiece, and they get into the octagon. Yep. To me, that's the story. That's the show, because every fight is their next fight is their always their most important fight. You know what I mean? Like, and so to me, it's just every time. I just love it so much. It's because they get in there and they have to fight their heart out. And you know, Dana, he'll cut you if you lose a couple in a row. So every fight's important for everyone.
It's funny you mentioned the Reebok deal, because I need to find out when that actually expires, because I think that is when the proverbial S will hit the fan here soon. Is if they re-up with Reebok and the fighters already are unhappy with that deal and how much money they're making off that, ooh, that could be interesting for them. Speaking of people unhappy, and probably one that's really unhappy coming in today, is a guy named Mark Hunt. Do you know why Mark Hunt would be upset?
Put me on the spot. I haven't seen any news updates, but...
Nope. Want me to give you a hint?
Sure.
I'm a white boy, I'm jacked. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar entered back in USADA testing, and they're talking about him potentially fighting in the UFC again.
I love that you had that queued up.
I was ready to go because I'm like, I want to talk about Brock here real quickly. And I'm like, I got to get that clip up. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Hunt, he's got a legitimate gripe. You know, I mean, he was pretty angry at the fact that, you know, Brock, you know, popped and whatnot. And
got rid of the loss, at least,
yeah,
on his record.
Yeah, you know, but Mark Hunt, he's a legend. And he can be a little bit of an emotional guy. So I could see why he'd be upset. But how about they just get back in there and run it again? I'd love to see it.
Well, that's the question I have. First of all, do you want to see Brock Lesnar back in the UFC again, even though he popped for steroids and had to sit out for at least a year? And it's going to be basically 18 months before he can get back into a UFC octagon again. But are you interested in seeing Brock Lesnar fight?
Yes, I am. My question is this: if I was interviewing Brock, I just be like, what the heck's going on in your head? You want to fight, you don't want to fight, you want to retire, you want to go to professional wrestling, you want to come back to the UFC. I mean, is he 40 yet? If he's not 40, he's pushing 40, and at some point you just need to hang it up. And
he's a white boy. He's jacked though. He's not necessarily a true 40. He's like Yoel Romero. They are only in 40 by number.
Yeah.
It's not like a true 40.
Right. You know, but look, he's a huge draw. And when you see a guy that's that massive and that has that wrestling pedigree, former UFC heavyweight champion, yeah, I'd love to see him back in there. I'll never forget. We were talking about this before we went live. I got to see right up close and personal Brock Lesnar versus Cain Velasquez in 2010. I was at that Anaheim show. And Brock Lesnar doesn't look like a normal human being. He seriously, I remember him walking out and I'm like, my God, he looks like a grizzly bear walking to the cage, you know? And I you couldn't have convinced me. We were talking on the way to that fight with my buddies. You couldn't have convinced me that Cain Velasquez was going to beat Brock Lesnar. I'm like, no one's going to beat that guy. Look at him. You know what I mean? But you know, obviously Cain has proven me and right. many others wrong. And he's one of the best heavyweights of all time. But this is the thing, you know, Brock doesn't like to get hit. You see anybody that, like Mark Hunt, for example, someone that's got a lot of power that throws punches, Brock doesn't like to get hit. He covers up, he turtles up, and you know that's the real big deficiency in his game. He's a great wrestler. If he gets you down on the ground, his size and strength, that's a big problem for whoever it is. You know, having said all of that, I'd like to see him back, but he's not going to be winning in the UFC heavyweight belts again anytime
Brock,
soon.
See, this is where I think you're wrong. If he is really committed to being a UFC fighter, which there's a report out from the pro wrestling realm that he wants to be done with pro wrestling after WrestleMania, which is in early April. So that would be his last fight. And then he'd be free to do whatever he'd want to because he'd be a relative, quote-unquote, free agent at that point. So, at that scenario, does he just decide, hey, I got one more UFC run, I can make a ton of money, Dana White knows I'm a huge draw. If I start to win some fights, I could be facing Stipe here in a year or two.
Stipe would murder him.
But okay,
he would absolutely annihilate.
And he might
Brock.
Not even be the champion by that point with the volatility of the heavyweights
That's
and whatnot.
True.
But let's just go through the scenario here. Who would you want to see Brock Lesnar face when he does ultimately come back for the UFC? Which I think the earliest he could come back would be that UFC card at the end of 2017.
Who would I want to see him face? Well, I'll tell you what. If you want to see him win, don't put him against a striker, someone with heavy hands. If you're talking about the heavyweight landscape out there and who there is to fight, I mean, Overeem's already beat him. I think Velasquez is a bad matchup for him. He's already beat him. I think Dos Santos's heavy hands would knock him out. Francis Ngannou's scary. That would be a tough fight for him. Same thing with Mark Hunt. I mean, when you look at some of the guys in their latter part of the heavyweight division, I mean,
but he's not coming in there to fight a latter part of the heavyweight division. I look at 10th down, and I'm not looking at a guy that I think is honestly going to be fed to Brock Lesnar.
I mean,
Arlovsky, Travis Brown, does that interest you at all? No. Steven Struve, I don't even think that would be on Dana's radar.
No.
I see three guys who would be on his radar.
Overeem?
No. Overeem's actually got himself close to another rematch with Stipe, I think, in my opinion. He just beat Verdum, which is one of the guys I think would be on the list. What's Verdum going to do? Every time he gets the step where if he had beaten Overeem, then you get Verdum-Stipe. That makes sense. But now he's got to step back because Overeem showed that he's better than him.
Yeah.
So Verdum is looking for something to do. I'm sure he wouldn't mind a big payday. Kane, I still think that would be a draw. If Kane's healthy and good to go, I'd love to see that one again, too.
I just think if you bring Brock back, if you want to build some momentum and see him make a run, you need to give him a first fight where he's going to get a win. And a lot of those
guys... But people
guys
were saying that was Mark Hunt. He was not going to beat Mark Hunt. He was a guy that matched up stylistically awfully for Brock Lesnar. And you know what? He went out there and won. Whether or not that was steroid-aided, he still won.
Yeah.
So...
Well...
And then Junior Dos Santos, I'm not sure exactly the availability of him or if he's like perfectly fine or if he's lost a step too, but I think that would be another draw. Because I honestly think if you're going to bring Brock Lesnar in there, you're going to give him...
You got to give him...
You're going to give him a very good heavyweight just to draw the fight because no one wants to see, I don't think, like an Arlovsky or even a Steven Struve versus Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. I don't know. You know,
he's
feel
a cash
like
cow.
He is a cash cow. You know, it's like, what would you do with Ronda Rousey if she decided she wanted to come back right now? You know, obviously she's a cash cow. She has a huge draw. Is she quite as polarizing and marketable now that she's gotten her head knocked off a couple times?
I could tell you exactly what they do with Ronda right now.
Tell me.
She'd be fighting Holly Holm.
Holly Holm.
That would be the fight.
Yeah.
She would be fighting Holly.
So she'd go up to 145?
What do you mean?
Holm's at 45 now.
No, she could fight at 135. She's actually listed as the number two ranked contender at bantamweight right now.
I thought she said that she was done with 35. She was going to.
But I mean,
45.
For a big money fight, I mean, why wouldn't you? That's what you do.
Yeah, maybe. That's the thing. Like, if you know George St. Pierre, we've had this discussion before too. Former champ. Technically, he never lost his belt. That fight against Hendricks, it could, you know, look, however you want to score. Right. We've talked about that before. But, you know, who do you give him if and when he comes back? There's so many things to consider and look at. But I guess that's why Dana and all those guys are making all the big bucks because they're making the decisions and keeping the hype train running for all these people.
You know, the worst thing that happened to Dana after that UFC 200 was him getting Brock for steroids because I think he saw that victory against Mark Hunt and said, hey, if I give him one more fight here at some point and work something out with the WWE, I can realistically put him as a championship contender. I could feed him one test and then I could throw him against Stipe and I can sell millions of pay-per-view buys for this stuff. But I think now he's gotta work his way back up. But I still think the businessman that Dana White is, knowing that people love Brock and he can bring people in from different realms, like Conor does, that he can market this guy. So if he can make him even a little bit more successful and give him like two wins, he'll be in the title picture. Two wins.
Well, either way, it gives us a lot to talk about. And as the summer progresses and we get closer to McGregor and Mayweather, we're going to have plenty, plenty to talk about. You know, another guy that's really marketable that has a lot going for him that we're going to see in a title match at some point soon, I'm guessing. You know who that is?
Who is that?
Our next guest, El Terror, Jimmy Rivera. We'll be right back with him.
The heat is on, the summer is here, and there are so much fun things to do in this area, but you know what you need to do first and foremost? You need to have a good, enjoyable dining experience with really good food, because you know what? That's first and foremost on my summer wish list. Yeah, it's getting a nice tan, it's working on the summer body, but it's also enjoying some of these great food items at the Sea Dog on the Front Street in Bangor. If you know me a little bit, you know I'm not one to really stray off of the burgers or the grilled cheese or whatnot. And that's why there's these perfect items here that can mix something I'm very familiar with something also I'm going to enjoy, like this lobster grilled cheese. It's sourdough grilled cheese with a lobster salad in the mix. So I get the comfort I have with a grilled cheese, but I can also include a little lobster. Get a little on the wild side there. How about a crab cake BLTA? Yeah, it's a crab cake served on a house bun with bacon, lettuce, tomato, and avocado. Oh, that sounds so good. There's so many great items at the Sea Dog at Front Street in Bangor for you to try, like a baked stuffed lobster entree as well, panko salmon, skewered tips, chicken and artichoke pasta. I'm just salivating thinking about all these things on the new 2017 Sea Dog summer menu. Go check it out for yourself. Tell them the Main Event sent you, and go try out some of these delicious, delicious items and wash it down with a nice, tasty beer. I would recommend the Blue Paw. It's my absolute favorite. One of the first beers I ever consumed as a legal, consenting 21-year-old who was able to buy alcohol. It was one of the Sea Dog Blue Paws. Absolutely one of my favorites. I'm actually going to go out there and buy one immediately after the show. We got to get some business done. But once this is over, I'm going to go get a Sea Dog Blue Paw because it sounds delightful on a nice summer day like today. Go check him out, Sea Dog, on the Front Street in Bangor.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, maiciándome como formo un alboroto. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, salte. ¿Qué va pasando mi combo? Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, maiciando la cata forman alboroto. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. ¿Qué va pasando mi combo? Me pasó la poder esa tela.
Joined now on the show by a 20-1 fighter with a 12-fight win streak, who'll be taking on Thomas Almeida as part of UFC on Fox 25 this weekend. It's Jimmy El Terror Rivera. Jimmy, welcome into the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, first off, we need to talk about the last fight, UFC 203, where you faced off against Uriah Faber, who's now a UFC Hall of Famer. But what was it like to pick up a victory against such a storied fighter in the UFC?
Man, I told myself I wasn't going to get starstruck. I grew up watching him. I love his swag and his style and stuff. And I got starstruck in that first, even the second round a little bit. And I didn't push it as much as I should have. And it was kind of hard, too. You know, he was, you know, not engaged as much. But it was great to fight someone I grew up watching. And, you know, I apologize. You know, he went, you know, after that fight, decided to make a real decision. He did one more fight, go on and win, and retired.
Do you feel like that was a good feather in your cap, too, that really got some eyes open for the MMA community as well?
Yeah, I think it was, especially, you know, the person that's really into MMA, not as much a casual fan. You know, they always want to see that knockout finish, and that's what I'm looking to get this Saturday night against Almeida. I'm excited because he's one of those fighters that don't run. He stays in there and fights and bangs away, so I'm looking forward to that. I definitely feel like I didn't get the credit I deserve. A lot of it was, you know, what's next for Faber? I'm like, how about the kid that just beat Uriah Faber, who just has his fourth fight in the UFC, who's 4-0 now, you know? But it is what it is. I just got to make a bigger statement, and I'm looking forward to doing that this Saturday.
And speaking of this Saturday, it'll be your next fight, but the last one, of course, was that UFC 203 card. Are you a little disappointed it's been almost a year since you fought last in the UFC?
Yeah, I mean, there's always those ups and downs. I was supposed to fight in January, and you know, my opponent got hurt, and then it didn't make sense. You know, my management company and my coaches, it didn't make sense to fight the people they wanted to bring in last minute. So I said, that's not a problem, and we just waited for the next day, and this was the next fight we got was Almeida in Long Island, and we said, yeah.
Now, this definitely is a huge fight with Almeida, and as you just mentioned, it is in Long Island, which is close to your home, based in New Jersey. What is it like fighting so close to home instead of traveling to Vegas or Brazil?
I mean, always, you know, always a drive away is freaking great. Flying is always horrible, especially when you go to a different country and you're trying to get food and stuff. It's a lot. It's a really, really different. So it's nice to be home. Plus, you know, like I tell everybody, I'm an instructor first, and I my first passion is teaching, and I have a school in New York City. So Monday through Saturday, I'm in NYC teaching at East 23rd Street is my my school, and I'm there Monday through Saturday. So it's still my backyard, and I'm still excited about it, and I still have a great following coming in.
Yeah, talk about your gym a little bit and some of the fighters too that are going to be participating in this card. It could be a very good weekend for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, for the card itself, we have an awesome card. We have Lyman Good on the main card, and we have Shane Burgos on Fight Pass. I mean, Shane's tearing it up. It's his third fight. He's doing unbelievable, and Lyman's coming back from a little layoff. He had hurt. I'm excited. You know, we have three people on the same card, and it's great when you fight with your other teammates. It just brings that camaraderie even up more, and it just, you know, gives you more energy, and I'm super excited about it. And with teaching, you know, teaching's always been my first passion. I teach from 3 years old. My oldest student's 76 years old. And it's really just teaching the average person. It's not a fight in school. It's really getting kids building their confidence and teaching them self-defense so they don't get picked on anymore from bullies. And adults teach them how to defend themselves and being in good shape. You know what I mean? They're tired of the gym. They want to do something different. They want to do something that's fun, that they're going to get a good workout in, and not to mention they're going to learn a life skill and learn how to defend themselves. And it's great teaching, and I love it.
Now, Jimmy, I've been watching your career for a while now, and it's been kind of neat watching you evolve. And last night, I pulled up UFC Fight Pass, and I watched that fight against Dennis Bermudez, your one and only loss of your career. And I forgot how much you handled him in that first round. You won that first round very clearly. Looking back on that fight now and how you evolved, how much better of a fighter are you now than you were then? And if you had a chance to face off against Bermudez again, what would happen?
I mean, I train with Bermudez on a week-to-week basis, and him and I are cool. We go back and forth and have a good time training. We kept in contact after the show, and you know, I went in there, I fought at 145, and I, you know, fighting at different weight class, a higher weight class is always harder, especially those guys are big. He's a big guy for 145, and going in there, you know, I had a great first round, stuck around and didn't do as well, and I focused too much on that fight of trying to get a little bigger instead of just keeping my cardio, kind of doing like Frank Yeager does, and being unbelievable cardio he was, and fighting at 155 and 145, and he doesn't have to cut like any weight. So that was my mistake, and I learned from my mistake, and, you know, and made me a better fighter.
A better fighter for sure. 12-fight win streak heading into this one. Just one loss in your career as a pro as well. And you're facing Almeida, who also has just one loss. Can you just break him down a little bit and what he brings to the table that fight fans can expect that you've been preparing for to gain victory here in Long Island this weekend?
I mean, the biggest thing I focus on once I know who I'm fighting is coming up with a couple game plans and being in unbelievable shape. I'm always training when I don't have a fight, helping my teammates and just trying to get better. I think that's what separates me a lot from other fighters. And I think once I have a fight coming up, it's just about being in shape and having a couple game plans so I can always switch it up.
Now, I know you don't want to look past Almeida, but is there anyone else in the bantamweight division that you might have your eye on after this one?
Hell yeah. I mean, I want to fight Cody for the belt. Cody can't fight, obviously. I'll fight TJ for the interim belt. And if that fight's going to happen, I'll fight Dominic Cruz and make it the number one contender belt.
I'd love to see that one. I know you would too, probably, right, Ryan?
Oh my God, yeah. I think that yourself versus any one of those top guys in the division would be a marquee matchup. Definitely a headliner for a card. Which one of those guys stands out, Jimmy, that you think would be an easier matchup for you? Is there someone that you think you'd handle rather easier than someone else, maybe like a Garbrandt?
I mean, I think the easy one would be TJ. I sparred him a couple of years ago in training, and you know, he's small for the division. He's good, but he isn't that great. But I got to spar him and woke him up a little bit, and I got to beat up their coach and mentor, Uriah Faber. I think next in line would have to be Cody. So I would love to take out all Alpha Male, one more. And then if, you know, obviously that didn't happen, Cruz would be an awesome fight. I mean, he's been around, he's well-known, obviously. He's ranked number one right now. That fight guarantees me a title shot for sure if they don't give it to me after this.
It's funny you bring up Cody, and again, he's the champ right now, so it makes sense. But he's also a guy who's mastered the art of talking smack and whatnot. And with Floyd and Connor also promoting their fight, what are your thoughts and your ideas on selling the fight by way of talking smack with one another? Do you feel like it's needed in this game, or is this something, too, that's more of a distraction?
Well, you know, some people need to do it, and some people come from different backgrounds like myself. I'm a martial artist at the end of the day, so I'm always, you know, humble, respectful. But the one thing I learned is that I'm going to speak what's on my mind, but be confident about it, not in a cocky way, obviously. And I think the biggest thing is your personality. Like, you can't trash talk a good trash talker. It's all how you come out and how you bring out. So I don't think I'm a great trash talker. I could come back and be a smart aleck with some comments, but I could definitely be confident I'm going to prove it.
Yeah, and you come across very humble, much like another guy I wanted to ask you about, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. You know, there's been some rumblings that maybe after he officially cleans out his division, that maybe he will come up to 135. What would a matchup with Mighty Mouse look like for you in your division, and how do you think he stacks up? Is he too small, do you think, to come up and fight in your weight class?
I think he's way too small. You know what I mean? I think I agree with the same thing with Dominic Cruz. I was listening, you know, talk about one time. I think he's small. You know, he is a 25er trying to fight at 135, and I think it's going to be hard for him. You know, I mean, the guys are going to be big, and the guys are good too. And not only they're good, they're a lot bigger. It's going to be a tougher fight for him than at 125. I think that's one of the reasons, you know, he didn't want to take TJ right away was, you know, he was afraid of TJ making weight, but TJ's a tough fight. You know, I mean, he wants to beat that record, and, you know, I kind of see both sides of Dana White and DJ or how it went, but I think he should stay at 125, but if he wants to come to 135, you know, I'll piece him up a little bit. I don't mind at all.
Love the confidence from Jimmy Rivera, who will be taking on Thomas Almeida as part of UFC on Fox 25 this Saturday night, starting at 8 p.m. Jimmy, thank you very much. It's our honor to talk with you, and we wish you luck this weekend.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Here at the main event, we are very proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. A couple of big things that are going on this summer at the Sea Dog. Tuesday nights, you can get $2 tacos as well as $2 Modelos. And from 6 to 8:30 on Tuesday nights, they have Name That Tune. So that's a good fun evening to do with the family or your friends if you want to head down to the Sea Dog on Tuesdays for $2 tacos and $2 Modelos. Also on Thursday nights from 6 to 8:30, they have trivia and prizes for trivia. So if you want to go and have some fun and test your knowledge and win some prizes, the Sea Dog is the place to go. As always, the Sea Dog is located at 26 Front Street in Bangor on the Penobscot River. You can reach them at 947-8009. Or if you're online, you can check them out at seadogbrewing.com and on Facebook at Sea Dog Bangor. The main event is proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog. And really, when you get a chance, go down to the Sea Dog and check them out, because not only is the menu the best, but they have unbelievable drafts on tap and a fun environment for everyone to enjoy. The Sea Dog, Front Street, Bangor.
Well, I started this dance in my neighborhood. Now everybody's doing it, because it feels so good. All you need is a partner that know how to move, and the rest are real easy. Just dig the groove. And when you get yourself started, it's hard to stop. You just go for your partners, you know what? And then you G-R-A-B-T-A-G-F-C-A-K-E-S.
That is the Junkyard Dog theme music. And you know what that means? We have the Junkyard Dog back on the show. Jonathan Gary, after a unanimous decision win at Bellator 181 over William Florentino. Welcome back, sir.
What's up?
So did you recognize the intro music that Brian put on there for us so kindly?
Heck yeah, man. That's awesome. Thank you, guys.
Well,
I haven't heard that in a minute.
I love Junkyard Dog, and I was trying to think. I'm like, I can't think of the song off the top of my head. Like, Real American, Hulk Hogan's theme song comes to mind. Of course, you got the Pomp and Circumstance with Macho Man, but Junkyard Dog really didn't get that heralded intro, but Grab Them Cakes is a phenomenal song.
Right? That's awesome, man. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, it's been a minute. The last time we had you on the show was after your unanimous decision win over Aaron Roberson at Bellator 167. Since then, obviously most recently, I just mentioned your win at Bellator 181, and you also took on Cody Pfister at Bellator 174. Let's dive into your most recent win here against Florentino. You got unanimous decision at a welterweight match up there. How pleased are you with getting this most recent win?
Oh man, I'm pleased about it, but I'm not too happy about it. Reason why is it was a short notice fight. You know, of course, you know, welterweight, I'm gonna walk around at least like, you know, 180, so it's not that hard to make the weight. But you know, I should have finished Florentino, but I didn't. So I mean, hey, I'm pleased with the win, but not happy with it. But I take it is what it is.
Do you feel like if you had more time to prepare, if it wasn't a short-notice fight, that you would have indeed gotten that finish?
Oh, yeah, man. I would have blown through that dude, man. I mean, he's a tough dude, don't get me wrong. I mean, but I was just way too much for him, way too much.
And
I just felt like I could beat him anywhere in the fight.
And again, that was another win for you in the Bellator promotion. Did you have a chance to speak with Scott Coker or anybody afterwards? And any ideas to maybe what will be next for you?
No, I didn't get a chance to really talk with anybody because I was the last fighter of the night, man. I didn't really get to fight until like 11:30 at night. So, I mean, I was the one all the way past the main card, all the way at the end. I mean, October 6th, there's going to be another Bellator show. I'm pretty sure that I'm probably going to be on it, whether it's a 2 months in advance or 2 days, 2 weeks. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to be there because, I mean, I guess I'm considered that Minuteman, that guy that they need when they have a tough fight or, you know, an easy fight. They're going to call me up regardless because they know I'm always going to be ready.
Well, with that in mind, is there anyone in particular you'd like to fight at one of those cards here coming up?
Man, I don't like to fight Dave Rickles. You know, I'm the guy that likes to take all the hard fights. There's no such thing as the easy fight. You know, I think it would be a good fight, and I think it would be a good fight to promote. I mean, Dave Rickles, you haven't seen him in a Bellator case for a while. I don't know what the deal was up with there in Kansas, though, but, hey, I wouldn't mind him fighting him in my backyard. I mean, what's the easy fight? I mean, there's not really going to be any easy one. So, I mean, if they need somebody to keep them warm, I'm here.
Yeah, and you've been talking about wanting to fight Rickles for a while. Now, the last time we had you on, I remember you were talking about wanting to get in there and test yourself against the Caveman. How realistic of a chance do you think you have at getting in there with him? Is there something that maybe you can do to drag him out of his cave and get him more paying attention to you and maybe signing some paperwork to step in and face you?
I don't know, man. I mean, probably my chances are like slim to none, because I mean they really want to promote Dave Rickles because he is that guy. So, but I guess I'm gonna have to make like a car salesman and make a car commercial or something. Me trying to fight Dave Rickles. You know how the Chris Bosh kind of took that approach, trying to get into the All-Star game. Yeah, I'm gonna have to take that same one or something. You know,
like,
hey, vote for JYD versus Caveman or something.
that could be a huge viral sensation.
Need a flashy suit, though, because you know people really dig the flashy suits. Maybe something not necessarily Conor McGregor-like with the FU on it, but maybe just something like bright yellow or orange or something like that?
Right. Or just, I mean, something. Maybe I should just dress up like a Neanderthal, like a caveman, and call him out or something. You know, maybe he might understand me on that.
Yeah, you could say that, you know, you're the real caveman, that he's the fake caveman, and you want to prove it at the next Bellator show.
Right, kind of like the double Undertaker. There you go.
Which one's the real one, though? That's the question. That would be so hard to determine.
Right.
So let's talk about I'm sorry, go right ahead.
I mean, just because he's a good fighter, you know what I'm saying? You always want to fight the best, beat the best, you know, so.
Absolutely.
Hey, why not?
Absolutely, and I know there'd be plenty of people out there that would love to see that fight. Both of you guys are very entertaining, and, you know, why not? So hopefully that would be a fight that happens in the near future. But I'm sure regardless of who you get matched up with, you'll be just fine, and hopefully we'll see you back in the Bellator cage very, very soon. Well, let's talk a little bit about what life has been like for you outside of fighting. What is a typical week and month like for you? Now, obviously, you spend a lot of time training at the gym, but what else are you doing nowadays that is keeping yourself busy?
Well, I work full time as a plumber, so, man, I'm constantly digging throughout the week. Like, most of my days are long days, more than 12-hour days, so it gets long. You know, shout out Bass Plumbing in Piedmont, but yeah, man, those guys keep me busy.
And how difficult is that when you got to put in a full day work at your 9-to-5 job, and then you got to go train? Is that tax your body more than maybe it would be for someone that all they do is train, and that's what they do full time?
Yeah, man. Because I'm in the heat, like I'm in Oklahoma, just humid, hot, 104 degree temperatures all day. So I mean, trying to go to the gym, by the time I get off work, the gym is closed, so I gotta concentrate and do my own thing. It's just like when I was in the military. Each time I go on deployment, I didn't have any training partners or anybody to train with, so I had to train on my own. I didn't have a nutritionist or nothing, so I had to eat what they served on the ship. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same thing just right here, just right back to that lifestyle. Making sure you're ready, making sure you're staying in shape, making sure you're on your tip-top game, because you never know what anything can happen. Anything can come around.
And
I have to fight on 2 days notice. So
Right. I mean, you're essentially like the Donald Cowboy Cerrone of the Bellator promotion there.
Right. but I'm still a free agent, though. So it's all gravy.
So with how physically demanding the sport of MMA is, obviously some people gloss over the fact of how mentally draining it can be too. What do you do for yourself to make sure that you keep yourself in the right frame of mind throughout the week during, you know, when you're in camp for a fight and you have to go do your job and then train? Like, well, what type of exercises do you do to keep yourself mentally fresh?
And I usually do like a 4 or 5 mile run. You know, get a little push-ups, cardio work in, you know, some footwork drills. You know, just knowing the fans, because I've been an athlete all my life, and I've competed competitively all my life, too. So, I mean, that's still, the athlete mindset is still in my mainframe, though. But trying to train as a fighter, or, you know, it's hard to get coaches around at that time, because, you know, coaches have family, too. So, I mean, they're not going to sacrifice their family time for you getting off of work at, like, 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night. Not happen. So you just take it up on yourself to make sure you're staying in shape, get your road work done, get your cardio done, get your strength and conditioning done, keep on those things so you can still be somewhat in good shape, but you're still going to be a while to be in fight shape.
Right.
Fight shape and being in shape is two different things.
Right, and so how frustrating can that be for someone who has all the ability in the world like yourself and wants to continue to pursue your career to the highest of levels? Does it make you question yourself sometimes when you're getting ready for a fight if you feel like you haven't had as much time in the gym to actually hone your skills and progress in some of those specific disciplines that you get in there and you roll with teammates or you're getting instruction from coaches? Does that affect you at all, or do you feel like you're still doing all the right things necessary to progress in your career?
Oh, it affects me a lot, man, because, you know, mentally you have to be there. You have to be in the fight, and sometimes I'm like a kid at a soccer game picking up lollies, you know, picking up flowers in the field like, oh, am I really here? Is this really happening? Holy crap, you know. So, I mean, you have to train your body before you train your mind. And, you know, sometimes I don't even get that, so I have to psych myself up. Like this Will Florentino fight, that was on a week notice, a little bit over a week notice. And I was like, man, I just got to the gym and I just really started getting back into training. So I had to go in the mindset like, I don't care if I get knocked out, tapped out, or just straight up bloody like that Brandon Gertz and Derek Campos fight, I'm just going to have to make it that way. This dude's going to have to literally kill me to keep me off of him. So, you know, I had to go in with that mindset, and it was just not a fully prepared mindset. My coaches held me together, though. You know, shout out Mike Winkle, John Chad Smith, and Giuliano Gileffi. They held my head together, but, you know, it was just a lot.
How much confidence does it give you when you do get in the gym to train? I mean, Jackson Winklejohn is, for my money, maybe the best MMA gym on the planet. How good do you feel after you spend some time there and hone your craft?
Amazing. Amazing, man. Like, you're around so many good training partners. You're around all the coaches, and the coaches and everybody in that gym are just so deep in depth. You know, it's, I mean, man, it's anything you could ask for. And it gets you right on that mindset because everybody's fighting. Everybody's competing. You might even have guys that are going on the day before you or the day after you just because so many people are there and there's so many promotions that's going on.
Right.
I mean, everybody just feeds off each other, and they're just like, man, we're ready. We're here in the fight. You better be ready, too. If not, you know, you're going to have a long night. So, I mean, it's really good, especially being there for a while and able to get an actual training camp in. It's really good.
All right. Need to focus a little bit on pro wrestling now. How much have you watched? How much are you caught up on? Are you watching stuff still consistently on the wrestling world?
No, man. It's just, It was just crazy how much it's changed. And, you know, when they did that WWE draft, or a draft. Where they mixed up different guys on different shows. Like, you see some guys on SmackDown, or you see some guys on Monday night. You know, you only get them on certain areas, or it's just like, you know, certain people that you like. Like, you want to see John Cena, but John Cena's not going to be there because he got drafted to Raw.
Right.
So, it's it kind of sucks for the viewer because, you know, you don't get to see your favorite wrestler all the time like you want to. Like, back in the day, you saw those guys, Monday Night Raw, WCW Thunder, Monday Night Nitro. I mean, you SmackDown. You saw those guys on a lot of things, and you saw them on a pay-per-view. So they were constantly in your face getting that promotion time. I mean, now it's just like, man, I barely see Randy Orton or I barely see John Cena. Brock Lesnar's like, hey, I'm coming back to the UFC. Like, I mean, it's just crazy, man. But I'm not too much caught up on it.
Who are some of your favorite, though, current ones? I know you said you aren't truly immersed into it right now, but are there some names that stick out?
Oh, man, I like Dan O'Brien. The Miz is kind of cool. He's funny in a way. Randy Orton, he's pretty badass.
You're going to be a big JR fan, too, being in Oklahoma, right?
Oh, yeah, man. Came out of Perry, man. Perry, Oklahoma. And what's his name? Dolph Ziggler?
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of, what's his name? Billy Badass?
Oh, yeah, Badass Billy Gunn. Yeah, he actually, ironically enough, I got a fun story about that one. Up here where we broadcast from, the restaurant actually brought him up for a little meet and greet session thing, and I interviewed him for 90 minutes plus, and then at the end we got to do the whole New Age Outlaws thing at the end. It was one of my favorite moments of doing professional wrestling stuff around here. So,
man, that's dope, dude. That's crazy.
Well, you mentioned Brock Lesnar, too. We talked about him earlier. What are your thoughts about him coming back? Is he someone that you're still interested in seeing fight in the UFC octagon as a fan, or is it maybe past his time of fighting in mixed martial arts now?
Man, I mean, he's a gargantuan-ass dude, and he does have his, you know, wrestling capabilities, but maybe you got to strike, man. Maybe you might hit like a Mack truck, but now that heavyweight division is back, might be a little bit harder for him now, but I mean, hey, more props to him. Go get your paper, man. Do what you gotta do.
And so, as a fan of the fight game, which you clearly are in general, what are your thoughts on this whole Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather matchup? Obviously, it's unbelievably polarizing, and it's got everyone's attention. What are your thoughts on it? Do you like seeing stuff like this? And ultimately, what do you think is going to happen when they get in there and box on August 26th?
I knew this was going to come up. My family, everybody has been asking about it, and I'm just like, everybody's like, oh, you know, I'm putting my money on Floyd. He's a boxer. No, I'm putting my money on Conor just because, you know, he's big. He's bigger than Floyd and all that. Man, boxing is so corrupt. People forgot boxing is owned by the mafia for so many years. So I wouldn't be surprised if Floyd throws the fight just because the money that he sees and stuff, you know, the odds are different. Or Floyd just goes out there and gets his 50-0. I can see that. But for the sport, I mean, it's cool. They're going to get money. Everybody's going to buy the pay-per-view. Everybody's going to be at Buffalo Wild Wings. Everybody's going to be at a lot of the places to watch it.
Now,
I don't know. I might be fighting on it. But beat me.
And people forget that Floyd Mayweather actually beat the Big Show in a wrestling match, too. So it's not out of the usual for him to beat guys like this.
You know what I'm saying? Floyd has been everywhere, man. I mean, Conor, he's good. I mean, I've seen him some of his sparring on the internet and stuff with actual boxers and stuff. I mean, and those guys, they're not that great. They've been giving him work. I mean, boxing and MMA is totally two different entities, two different things. You know, boxing, you have to apply those rules that, you know, keeping your hands up and chin down and tucked, and you're only to use your hands, so it keeps you limited. So you really have to play with your footwork and angles on it. But MMA, I mean, you got everything. You got takedowns, you got clinches, you got a back against the cage, takedowns from the cage. A lot of things can help you, you know. But boxing, you only got two weapons to work with you. So an MMA guy trying to transfer over into the boxing world, it could happen. A lot of guys do have really good hands. So, but those boxers on a whole nother level, like these guys grew up boxing like from 6 to 7 years old. And, man, I mean, I ain't seen Floyd lose ever. So.
Yeah. And obviously everyone's talking about, like, hypothetically speaking, if Floyd were to come into the octagon, that Conor would demolish him. But, you know, again, this is not a mixed martial arts fight. This is a boxing matchup. Now, if Floyd wins, like most people expect, do you think it will be a unanimous decision just by him outpointing Conor for the duration of the fight? Or do you think there's a chance he can knock Conor out?
There's a chance he can knock Conor out, because going 12 rounds and boxing in 5 minutes, 5 rounds, 5 minutes in the octagon is two different stories. It's two different stories. Because we've seen Conor run around from Nate Diaz from rounds 3 to 5. I mean, just in the second fight, the Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor too. Conor was running. Conor didn't want to stay in there because Nate Diaz, he's got the type of stamina and the hands to drown the shit out of you. You know, and he's got the cardio for it. Floyd can go 12 rounds like it isn't nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, like he'll make it look like schoolwork. And I mean, Conor, I'll give him maybe to round 4, round 5, because Vegas gonna have him amped up. His country gonna be there. I mean, a lot of feelings gonna be up in there. And that boxing realm is a whole lot of different story, because you got the entourages in boxing that'll get at you. They're going to be talking smack to you. It's going to be like Southpaw with Jake Gyllenhaal. All over. Except reality, maybe. I mean, but look how long it took Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather to fight. We never know. They might cancel it on him.
Oh, geez, hopefully not. I know myself, Brian, everyone I've spoken to, can't wait just to see it. Regardless of what happens, it's going to be a spectacle, and they're going to both make a lot of money. So we'll have to wait and see what happens on the 26th of August when it does go down. But, Jonathan, I got to get your thoughts on your Oklahoma City Thunder. You're a big basketball fan, and they had a pretty big signing just recently in getting Mr. Paul George. So how much better does that make them?
Man, it's going to make them a lot better, because PG-13, he now has Russell Westbrook. I mean, even though that's kind of, you know, it's both hit and miss, but Russ is going to get you points, and PG-13 is going to get you points. And both of them guys, I think they're going to feed off each other. It might be lights out for a lot of teams, but you got to think about it. We're in the Western Conference. The Western Conference is so stacked, it's unreal. Even the Utah Jazz is back now. I mean, even they lost Gordon Hayward, and he went to, you know, the famous Boston Celtics, you know, and I kind of like the way he did that. Hey, the West right now is ridiculous, from Houston all the way up to the Thunder, the Golden State, even the Portland Trail Blazers. Everybody in the West is going to be making noise, and I don't think it's really anybody in the Eastern Conference. But I think we need a little bit more to add to the Thunder, and I think we'll be playoff contention.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting season. Obviously, the Warriors are head and shoulders the team that most people think are going to walk through the season again and most likely win another championship. But you keep seeing these teams out in the West load up. You know, the Houston Rockets, what they've done recently, and adding Chris Paul, that you know, bolsters their chances to really take that next step. And then obviously you guys getting Paul George. It's going to be interesting to see where Kyrie Irving goes. He's demanding a trade. He wants out of Cleveland.
That's not happening.
You don't think so?
That's not happening. They're not going to trade Kyrie Irving. Come on.
I don't see him leaving Cleveland either, man. It's too good over there. He's got it good. I mean, you're a star. Keep it that way.
Yeah,
I mean, you could be a star anywhere you go, but no, man. Stay with your team and try to get that next championship. These guys switching up teams, like, man, I don't know what it is. It must be something in the water, because nobody can't stay true. Like, I'm still butthurt about Kevin Durant.
And if Kyrie seriously wants to have his own team, he's going to next year, because LeBron James is going to go out to Los Angeles or something, so he doesn't have to worry about it. He'll have his own Cleveland Cavaliers.
I think that's why he wants to leave, because he sees the writing on the wall that LeBron only has 1 year left in Cleveland, and then he's going to be taking off and taking his talents to La La Land or wherever he decides to go. But I think that's part of the reason why you're seeing all this.
Come on to Oklahoma. Come on to Oklahoma. You can put Kyrie at point. We can give up a whole lot of people. Hey, Adams can go too. Man, I'm just telling you. If LeBron wanted to come, I mean, I know he's going to go to L.A. because their money is ridiculous over there, but why leave? Like, everybody's, like, leaving. I would try to go at Golden State for at least 2 more years again because I ain't going to let Kevin Durant just come up and do that to me in the playoffs like that. Man, like, you ever seen KD play like that?
Oh, it was ridiculous,
yeah, it was
and
filthy.
I honestly, seriously hope that even though that the Thunder are better this year, hopefully they aren't completely gutted, because I do feel a little worrisome that Russell Westbrook's going to opt out, and you may also see Paul George be going out to L.A. too. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that that won't be the case for you in particular, Jonathan, but I don't know, I'd be a little worried.
No, I'm worried, man. Don't get me wrong. I hope Klay Thompson, you know, leaves the Warriors and comes to the Thunder. That'd be pretty cool. But man, it's just these guys switching up teams, man. It's not the same. Like, you're gonna have teams leave, and probably Oklahoma's gonna go back to Seattle where they don't want to go. But I mean, it could be a whole lot of teams, man. But that playoffs way Kevin Durant played, I was like, you could have played like that. Well, we could have beat them. But
right,
you want to play lights out, man.
Well, the NBA is continuously a revolving door for players going to different teams, so you never know what can happen. 6 months from now, a year from now, it could be a completely different team that you're cheering for. But either way, that's why us basketball fans continue to tune in, because we like watching the round ball on a consistent basis. Jonathan, before we let you go, when you know you talk about you're up for fighting whenever you say you're the guy that they can call last minute and step in, but when would you like to fight next? You mentioned that the next Bellator card. Do you think there's a chance that you get on that one? And if you don't, are you going to have to wait until maybe the end of the year? We're just curious when we should expect to see the Junkyard Dog back in action.
Oh, man, you're definitely going to see me October 6th. And Bellator can't leave me, and I can't leave them. So October 6th, he can plan for that. That's going to happen. Somebody's gonna drop out or whatever, and I'm gonna get that call. They're gonna throw up that JYD and like the back signal in the sky, and I'm gonna answer. And so that's gonna happen with that, and then who knows? I might get another fight right at that at the end of the year. I like to open up New Year, so that would be pretty cool. I like to go back to Japan and do New Year. That'd be pretty awesome.
Well, regardless of what you do, I know we both look forward to seeing you back competing again soon. It's always a pleasure to watch you in there fighting, and it's always great to have you here on the show. Thanks for coming back and seeing us again. Let's do it again at some point here soon before the year's over.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you guys for having us, man. And shout out to the Main Event for always having me on the shows. You know what I'm saying? They're always keeping me updated with stuff and asking great questions. So, hey, man, thank you guys.
It's a pleasure. Anyone you want to give a shout out to? Any sponsors? Anyone you'd like to thank before we close this out?
Oh yeah, man. Appreciate everybody at Bellator. All my coaches: Coach Winklejohn, Chad Smith, Giuliano Gileppi, Sarah Casey Photography, Jeff Thurman from Success Vodka, James Watson from Keenan Corporate Company. Always keeping it positive. Nathan Bagby for Not Dead Yet Apparel for people that's against human trafficking, and man, just a lot of guys. And oh. And Floyd from Dome Peace Audio. Thank you guys for supporting me and making the dreams come true. Teamwork makes the dream work.
The Junkyard Dog, Jonathan Gary. Thank you as always, bud. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, guys. Have a good Saturday.
The heat is on, the summer is here, and there are so much fun things to do in this area. But you know what you need to do first and foremost? You need to have a good, enjoyable dining experience with really good food. Because you know what? That's first and foremost on my summer wish list. Yeah, it's getting a nice tan, it's working on the summer body, but it's also enjoying some of these great food items at the Sea Dog on the Front Street in Bangor. If you know me a little bit, you know I'm not one to really stray off of the burgers or the grilled cheese or whatnot. And that's why there's these perfect items here that can mix something I'm very familiar with something also I'm going to enjoy, like this lobster grilled cheese. It's sourdough grilled cheese with a lobster salad in the mix. So I get the comfort I have with a grilled cheese, but I can also include a little lobster. Get a little on the wild side there. How about a crab cake BLT-A? Yeah, it's a crab cake served on a house bun with bacon, lettuce, tomato, and avocado. Oh, that sounds so good. There's so many great items at the Sea Dog at Front Street in Bangor for you to try, like a baked stuffed lobster entree as well, panko salmon, skewered tips, chicken and artichoke pasta. I'm just salivating thinking about all these things on the new 2017 Sea Dog Summer Menu. Go check it out for yourself. Tell them the Main Event sent you, and go try out some of these delicious, delicious items and wash it down with a nice, tasty beer. I would recommend the Blue Paw. It's my absolute favorite. One of the first beers I ever consumed as a legal, consenting 21-year-old who was able to buy alcohol. It was one of the Sea Dog Blue Paws. Absolutely one of my favorites. I'm actually going to go out there and buy one immediately after the show. We got to get some business done. But once this is over, I'm going to go get a Sea Dog Blue Paw because it sounds delightful on a nice summer day like today. Go check him out. Sea Dog on the Front Street in Bangor.
Never seen a white person before. Jaws all on the floor like Pam, like Tommy just burst in the door and started whooping her ass first.
And we are back, episode 65 of The Main Event, brought to you by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. UFC 214 is next Saturday, July 29th at the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. And on the phone now, it is a pleasure to have the senior editor at Flow Sports, and you've seen a lot of his pieces if you've loved MMA on Flow Combat. Dwayne Finley is here on The Main Event. Thank you so much for being here.
Episode 65 will be the best episode. I'm with you, handsome gentlemen. Let's rock and roll.
Love it, love it. You're gonna have to argue with Hunter a little bit about that, because I know he came and gave a pretty good performance when he was here as well. So you guys will have to have a little debate on who was better.
I'll tell you what. Let's throw that in there in the ongoing mix of constant debates. But I gotta say, man, anybody who follows MMA or kind of lives and breathes the sport, I couldn't ask for a better partner in crime. You know, he's the Robin to my Batman, so to speak. And we're building something special at Flow Combat. You know, and it's rare to see somebody. You know, when you have these kind of different ideas, these different visions and dreams, to have somebody that feels the exact same way. So like we're honestly like a symbiotic unit, focused on world domination. It's crazy.
And you guys are doing a fantastic job, and again, I'd like to thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure to be able to interact with the both of you guys, and you coming on and breaking down this UFC 214 card is a big help to us, and so we'll dive right into all of that here shortly. But first of all, Dwayne, I'd love to get, you know, your background for some of our listeners that who don't know who you are. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in covering MMA, and just give us a little history on yourself.
It's crazy, man, because, you know, I don't come, that's why, you know, everybody's like, oh, journalist this, journalist that. I don't come from a journalistic background, so I don't consider myself a journalist. I mean, I didn't go to college. I was writing creative fiction well before I found this MMA thing. So that's why my stories are a little different. You know, if you read them, it's a narrative, and then, you know, you then with quotes plugged into it, you know. And it's funny, when I came into the sport in 2009, all the interviews were Q&A format. And it's just the laziest way to be. You know, I mean, I'm not knocking people who do it, but I mean, if you consider yourself a writer, then challenge yourself. You know, if they're giving you the answers, you have to meet, tell the story, then tell the story. So, when I got here, and how I got here was, I'd done some fiction. I published a book in 2008, and I thought, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, that's going to be where, you know, I wanted to be a novelist. You know, I wanted to be that, like, that's how I saw things. And then it just wasn't really happening, you know. I was working a regular gig, man, like blue collar. I was in a lumber yard full time, like 12 hours a day. Then I'd come home and write these little, you know, side pieces like bank pamphlets or radio spots, because my neighbor worked at an ad agency and he would just throw me work that his team couldn't get. So then I had a buddy who's like, hey, you know, BJ Penn, and I was a big fan, you know, fighting. I watched MMA all the time. And he knew, like, BJ Penn's cousin or something. And said, hey, you know, BJ Penn is looking for this. And that's back when BJPenn.com was legitimate. Now, it wasn't that copy and paste what it is now. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I sent an email, and they responded, and it was JD Penn and BJ's brother. And he's like, hey, man, you're the guy who runs it. And, you know, and so I got linked up with that. And then, like, 2 months after I started there, they sent out this email, like, hey, BJ wants to see original interviews with fighters on the site. And I was like, man, of course I'll take it. BJ knows everybody. He'll give me all the contacts, you know? And so I signed up for it and took it. And then when I sent the email, I'm like, hey, can I get the contacts? They're like, BJ's not giving you contacts. Figure it out. And I was like, man, I don't know anybody. How am I going to figure this out? So, but that's the best thing. That's the best thing that ever happened to me, because once I was made to figure it out, I started going through, and then I would get one fighter, and then they would like the piece, and then they'd be like, hey, man, you need some help? Anybody you want to talk to on my team? And they'd go to the next one and the next one, and then fast forward, you know, 9 years, and, you know, we're at the top of the game. You know, I am doing pieces with John Jones. You know, I mean, it's like, I say this all the time, and it sounds cheesy and cliche, but, man, if you speak it into existence, I mean, it happens. If you have a dogged tenacity to do something, there's nothing that can stop you. I mean, I've worked for everybody. I worked for, you know, SB Nation. I worked for Bleacher Report for a long time. I did work for USA Today and, you know, CNN, and then now in Sports Illustrated. Now, you know, I have my own thing. It's crazy, man.
That sounds a little bit like Conor McGregor, you know, like attracts like, and if you believe something, it's going to come to fruition. Is that the kind of same mindset that you have, that Conor's always preaching, kind of like what the Rhonda Byrne secret thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The only difference, like, where I think people get, well, let me say this, absolutely, you know, talk to Audiatar and, you know, Conor, and we're all, like, I'm very much a universe person, but the thing that people miss out on, what Conor's saying and what I say, is if I say I'm going to do it, it's going to come true, because between speaking into an existence and it happening, there's a crap load of hard work that goes into it, and that's what people miss. People are like, oh, you just can't say I'm going to get a Ferrari, and a Ferrari appears. No, that's stupid. But if you say that you're going to get a Ferrari and you truly believe that Ferrari is the only thing you think about, I promise you, you will make that money to make it happen. Because if that's your only focus, the way I say it is this. If you tell a five-year-old kid, you took a 4 or 5-year-old kid, and you're like, hey, that kid's like, I want this bike. I know the bike I want. I can see it in my head, and that's what I'm going to do. Every day that kid wakes up, everything he does is going to be about that bike. You guys think he's going to get that bike? Heck yeah, he will, because he doesn't have distractions. But when we become adults, we say, oh, yeah, I want to write for a living. But then it's like, you know, that's your focus. And the next day you're like, oh, I have relationship problems. Oh, my job is making me work over. They're not paying me enough. We get distracted. So it never comes to fruition. And then we get, you know, angry about it. And then we get resentful about the people who are succeeding. So that's why I think that it's like, it seems like hocus pocus to a lot of people. But it's fact. I mean, if you put positivity out into the world, you get positivity back. Gratitude reciprocates. It's scientific fact. So not to get all like crazy crystals on you, but, you know, like, it's true, and it's, I'm absolutely a living example of that.
So to go back to when you said you first started covering MMA and you were told to just figure it out, that's interesting to me, because when people, the outside world, people that maybe don't follow MMA like we do, they think of it almost as like a blood sport, you know, people just getting in there and hurting one another, and maybe they don't think that these guys are good people or whatever, that they're barbarians. What I've experienced, and what, you know, Brian here too has experienced since covering MMA, is how nice and accessible everyone has been, and how they're just good people, and they want to grow and find their niche in the world, just like you and me. And is that something that has resonated with you when you were starting to cover MMA, and how it's helped you get to where you're at right now?
Absolutely, 100%. And that's what it's been about from the start, and that's what it'll always be about for me. It's about the people that make this sport happen. So, like I said, I don't consider myself a journalist. I consider myself a storyteller, and I've been saying that for almost a decade now, because my interest in this, for me to do what I do best, is I have to be able to connect with people. I got to figure out, like, there's guys that fascinate me, and those are some of the best stories I've told. You know, I did this thing with Carlos Condit, like a six-chapter thing on MMA Junkie, where I spent a month and a half with him in the lead-up to the Robbie Lawler fight, just to kind of figure out, man, I'm like, why is a guy who's so decent and easy and loving and a family man, but when he's in there, something changes. Some different kind of animal comes out, something primal, and I see the same in Frankie Edgar. And Frank's a buddy of mine. I spent a lot of time with him, and I see that because, look, for me to do what I do best, I just have to be able to engage, and I have to be able to connect, because listening and understanding people is a gift I have. You know, it's just something I can do. So if you look at, like, this latest John Jones piece that's up on Slow Combat, that's a year, man. Like, that's a year of covering, of talking to John and interacting with John, which has been, you know, an honor and privilege, because he's had his life you know, sealed off from the media. But yeah, man, it's all about that, and it will forever be about that. And when it stops being about the people that helping people understand how great and decent these people are, then I'll do something else.
Now, before we dive into UFC 214, and we definitely want to talk about that John Jones piece, but real quick, Dwayne, when you think about, you know, where you're at now, where you started, and where you eventually want to be, where do you ultimately see yourself? Where do you see the growth of Flow Sports and Flow Combat, and how much bigger do you think you guys can get?
Oh, there's no ceiling for us, and that's the crazy thing, man. And like I said, I'm not saying this to knock anybody else, but we have a distinct advantage, especially with what's happening right now in MMA, man. We're seeing sites close up left and right. We're seeing budgets cut. We're seeing all stuff because all these sites are traffic-based entities. It's traffic equals ad revenue equals pay, and that's how they do it, and that's how they've always done it. We don't do that at Flow Sports. Not that traffic's not important. It is. We do great traffic, but we get our money from somewhere else. So while all these other, you know, dudes, like all across the board, this year, 2017 alone, there's been no Ronda. Connor's boxing, and John's not back yet. So there's been nothing to really hit superstar-wise that will transition to a bigger thing, what these other sites you used to see, and everything's kind of down. Well, as they're going down, Flow Sports is going up. You know, you look at this, that like the cable-cutting situation. There's a big argument right now with what the last UFC pay-per-view and the last Bellator pay-per-view underperformed. Well, everything's going to digital sports streaming. Well, guess who's been here doing it for 12 years? Flow Sports. You know what I mean? So we have a distinct head start. So that's what I said last year when we launched. And people kind of took it the wrong way. I said, people think we're new to the table, but they're going to realize in about 6 months just how far ahead of the game we are. And it's proven to be true.
I was about to say, too, because I know part of Flow Sports is like Flow Slam, where you have independent wrestling involved, and then you're venturing off into other sports. And in particular, MMA, you have regional promotions in which people can pay to watch that too. Do you feel like that's helped out just getting more eyeballs on Flow Sports in general, just being able to cover a gamut of different things as opposed to just covering one entity constantly?
Oh, absolutely, man. And before Combat was launched last year, I mean, Flow Wrestling's been there for 10 years and an absolute staple of that sport. You know, Flow Track's been there for 10 years. I mean, so these things have been, you know, already established well before Combat came along. But what we found out with Combat is, you know, covering the regional scene in the depth that we have. So we're taking seasoned writers like myself, Hunter, James Lynch, and we're putting a bigger spotlight on some of these guys and girls. And what's happened is funny because you see a lot of the people that we highlight and feature quickly get snatched up by like LFA or the Dana White series that's going on, and that's great. I love that they can move up. You know, the Dylan Cowles of the world, and you know Hannah Rockola or Scott. She's a Scoggins now. I mean, she got a lot of attention. Joe Selecki's, you know, from up north that way. But you know, I look at this and I'm like, cool. You know, that this can spotlight fighters. It just gives another extended reach of the ladder, where it's not such of a shadowed place where these guys come out of boom. You know, there's like a Sage Northcutt comes out of, you know, Legacy or whatever. It's like now you can see these guys coming up. Every great fighter starts somewhere, and we've put a lot of focus in the, you know, and we will continue to do so in the future on prospects. So, you know, it's been interesting for me to shift from, like, you know, interviewing like Cormier and Jones and you know, Ronda to like guys who are making their professional debut. It's been kind of crazy.
Where do you see Flow Combat and Flow Sports in general in, like, let's say 5 years? We'll give that kind of time frame. Where do you see it in five?
I think it's a much bigger deal, man. Like, I think, and not on the editorial side. I think we'll always be a big deal there. I think on the live event side, you know, we've already partnered with one championship. We streamed the last card, Askren and Angela Lee. We're going to continue to work with them. We have been in talks, you know, some things I can't really share, but we've been in talks with some bigger promotions. Partnerships and stuff like that, because we already have the base. You understand? You know, like, we already have the digital streaming base that's already set up and running. We have, like, there's no bugs there. It's a well-oiled machine. So if you're looking at one of these bigger promotions, you're like, man, we need to really, you know, pick up, because they don't have a subscription service, or their subscription service isn't really, you know, hitting it. Dude, pay-per-view-wise, if you took, you know, your pay-per-view mile and scrapped it and said, okay, look, we're going to give you every pay-per-view for, it's a $30 subscription. You get every pay-per-view for the year. Bam, dude, it's massive, right? I mean, who wouldn't sign up for that? I'm not in those meetings. I'm not in those things, and I'm not saying they're exactly happening. You just asked me where I project it in five years, but I definitely see that that's where it's heading.
And where do you see the sport of MMA going? Obviously, the UFC is the pinnacle right now, but Bellator is really doing some interesting things. And although they're not quite at that UFC level, they're getting a lot of phenomenal fighters. And quite honestly, there's a lot of, it's almost like a feeder system. Some of like the best guys end up going from Bellator to the UFC, and the sport just continues to grow. Ultimately, where do you see things a couple of years from now as far as these promotions? Do you think the UFC is going to continue to separate themselves, or do you think that we're going to have another player in the game, like something like another Bellator?
Well, I'll tell you what, man, and I've said this before, whoever's at the wheel of the UFC with the new ownership has been asleep at that wheel for the first 7 months of the year. I mean, they just have. And in that time, Bellator's made some serious ground. And what I'll point to as proof, and it's not Mustafi going over or Bader, which are big things, but Logan Storley, who's a blue chip prospect out of South Dakota, 5-0, he was offered contracts to both UFC and Bellator, and he chose Bellator. He chose Bellator mainly because he is already making more in sponsorships than what Reebok in the first five fights would give him. He would lose money going there. So I think if you see a prospect that's actually choosing Bellator over the UFC, then that's a big signal to a big shift that's happening. So I think Bellator continues to make ground. Scott Coker told me in New York that 90% of the free agents they've gone after, they've landed, and they're not going to slow down on that. So UFC, letting guy like Mustafi go, letting Ryan Bader go, UFC has to button that up, man. They can't just let everybody walk, or it's going to be a painful situation, because UFC has operated off stars for years, and where are they at, man? You know what I mean? Like, I love Tony Ferguson. I love Khabib. I love, Max Holloway. I love those guys. It's like, okay, well, cool, but they're still 2 years out from being draws. You know what I mean? It's still being to be massive, and UFC has to put, promotion money behind them. Cyborg, we're just seeing them kind of come to make amends with her, and it's like, come on, man, she could be huge. So I think, the UFC will eventually right the ship, but when they do, I think by the time they do it, Bellator already had made so much ground that in the eyes of us, that, us hardcores, that there won't be much of a difference, to be honest with you.
Well, that just makes it more exciting for us. More fights to talk about on a more frequent basis. There's going to be cards, whether it's the UFC pay-per-views or on Fox Sports 1 or Fox like the UFC does, or if it's going to be on Spike with what Bellator does. It's just more exciting for all of us, and it gives us more to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. It's better for the fighters to have options, and I'm all about that. Like, and that's one thing that's different about Flow Combat, man, is like, we're not beholden to anybody. I think that, like, you look at some of these other sites and they're like, oh, they only cover UFC and they cover Bellator every once in a while. It's like, man, you got to spread it out. And the reason they don't is because there's certain things that don't really drive a lot of traffic. But that doesn't really matter to Flow Combat. You know what I mean? That we can run a feature, a 1,000-word feature on a prospect, and it does the job it's meant to do. So, I think it's great for the fighters.
Well, let's dive into some of this UFC stuff. We got a big card tonight. I know we brought you on to talk about UFC 214, but tonight on Fox is UFC on Fox 25. The main card is headlined by Chris Weidman and Kelvin Gastelum. Chris Weidman, obviously the former champion. He has lost 3 in a row to Luke Rockhold, Yoel Romero, and Gegard Mousasi. This fight against Gastelum is huge for his career. What do you envision happening in that main event, and if Weidman loses, what does the UFC do with him?
Well, I'll say it's a crazy situation to think that Weidman could go from being on top of the world to unemployed in 2 years. You know what I mean? Let's be honest. A 4th straight loss, I don't know how they would keep him around with what he makes. So he's in a terrible position, man, because Kelvin Gastelum told me, last week, he's like, look, I come in, hey, man, I don't have the best fight. I still have a job on Monday. Weidman doesn't have a good night, he doesn't have a job, and that changes things. And plus, he's in Long Island, and he said, after Mousasi, he said he'd never fight in New York again. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure on him. I just think Kelvin's the wrong guy right here, man. So I think Weidman, I think it'll be a competitive fight through three, but Gastelum's a well-conditioned man, and his wrestling's top. So, I think he can fend off life and take downs, and if they have to be on the feet, Kelvin's going to piece him up, man. You see what, you know, Kelvin did to Tim Kennedy and Vitor Belfort. You know, I think Chris Weidman's super hittable. So I think, you know, if Chris Weidman can't get Kelvin down and keep him down there, it's going to be a horrible night for him.
What has Gastelum told you about maybe some of the differences he's making as far as his weight goes? Obviously, he struggled at 170. Now at 185, what does he walk around at? And has he told you anything about maybe some of the life changes he's making so he doesn't miss weight anymore?
Yeah, man, I think, you know, Kelvin walks around about 190, to be honest with you. Every time I've seen him and spent time with him, that's been right around where he's at. No, it's just for him, man, it's just maturing. That's all it is. Like, it's not anything other than that. It's just him realizing what he wants and dedicating himself to it. And that's the thing. This last carry that he's been on at 85, I think he's found that discipline, man, and it shows in his performances. So I think he realizes, like, what he can be in this sport, and that's a champion. He really, now he's motivated to do it. He's not ruling out a drop down to 170, and with the discipline that he's shown, I think he can do it, no problem. But the thing I love about Gastelum, and I'll say this over and over about, you know, we talked about fighters and who they are. This guy is so positive, man. Like, he's such a good, positive, you know, easygoing guy that, like, you know, the negativity, the times that I've done the best articles with him have been right off some adversity and hardship. And I'll tell you, brother, that he always keeps his head up. He's always like, yeah, it's a step back and it sucks, but I got to learn from it. I'm meant to have this step back, and now, you know, now I got to go forward. And what happens is the accumulation of all those lessons learned from missteps, you know, you're going to be an unstoppable force if you can put that education together, and I think that's what we're going to see.
And it's crazy to think about from someone that's 25 years old like Kelvin Gastelum to be as mature as you're saying that he is and to have the future, the bright future at that he has in front of him. He's going to be a scary, scary guy for many years to come regardless of what division he's in and whoever his opponent is. So it's going to be a phenomenal main event tonight at UFC on Fox 25. Dwayne, who are some of the other big fights here on the card tonight that stand out? Is there another fight that you think is just going to maybe steal the show? Or a specific fighter that we should keep our eyes on?
You know, I like I'm big on John Volante, man. Like that guy's a cut up, and he's a hard nosed guy. I mean, I think you get you see what you get with him all the time, and I love that in fighters, man. He just comes out to bring the ruckus. He's got a tough fight in Cummins, and I think that's going to be interesting. So, you know, I don't think there's a lot on this card, to be honest with you, but yeah, that'd be the other one that I'd be interested in.
Well, we just talked with Jimmy Rivera a little earlier, and do you think, I know he's ranked in the top five of the bantamweight division, do you feel like eventually he could be a champion in the UFC?
Oh, yeah, man, Rivera's tough as nails. I mean, and he kind of came out of nowhere. I dig that. I mean, I dig that kid's scrappiness. So, yeah, I definitely think so. But, you know, but if you're going to be in that conversation, then you got to fight big names, man. You know what I mean? Like, you got to, like, you know, like Aljo's fighting Barao. That's a huge fight. I know bantamweight's a little shuffled up right now, so there's a lot of talent in it. But man, there's a monster sitting on top of that division right now. You know, Cody Garbrandt's no joke, and he's going to be tough to get out of there. But then you got to think, you know, with TJ and Cruz, I love it. That's like when you kind of have a pick'em, you know, and there's options. I love it because for as much as I love dominant champions, I love a good divisional push because it shows, you know, there's a lot of people you can watch come up in that division. That's why I love the featherweights. But Jimmy's no joke, man. I think in another year or two, we'll see him in a title fight.
Real quick, I'm curious if you can give us any thoughts, if you have any inside info here. There was, speaking of the champion Garbrandt, there was all those rumors and what happened you saw in the most recent season of The Ultimate Fighter that he knocked out Dillashaw in training. Is there some validity to that? Have you seen this so-called tape? And if they do, you know, match up with one another here eventually for the belt, do you think Garbrandt retains?
I'll tell you what, I haven't seen any video, and I usually don't dig into things like that, but I can tell you this. I've been to Alpha Male during their sparring sessions, and, man, there's no joke, dude. Those guys go at it. I think it's on Wednesdays they do it. They go all out for 10 minutes, and if that's the case, I could definitely see Garbrandt clipping him, you know, and that's the thing is there's other beef there, man. Like, it's not just what happened, you know, it's not just what went on with, you know, Cody and TJ or TJ in favor. There's other things that goes deeper. And that thing is, if you're going to kind of tell stories in MMA, you kind of hear a lot of things, and that's the thing is I hear all kinds of things at gyms, and I think I would be, you know, if I ran and put them on the internet or I, you know, talked about them, then that'd be kind of, you know, lesser because I only have one side of the story. So only thing I can say to validate that is that they go all out. Just like I've seen at Kings MMA, like I remember sitting there with Hunter in Darius Spar, a kickboxer he's prepared for Barboza, and I was like, dude, they're not throwing 50%, they're throwing 100%, and it was like almost scary to watch because you were like 5 feet away. I'm like, whoa, you know, like that's crazy, but some of these gyms do it, man.
And you know, there was also AKA has been notoriously known for maybe going a little too hard in training. Is that something that you, as the sport continues to evolve, that you think that you're going to see some of these top level fighters maybe dial it down a little bit during camp, or is that something that you think these guys need to do in order to prepare themselves to step into the big stage in front of, you know, millions of people watching at home?
I know a lot of guys who dial it back, man, and don't do, you know, the veterans, they don't do live sparring, you know what I mean, in the camps. Like, you know, Robbie Lawler is one of the guys that extended his career because he stopped live sparring, you know. I mean, they go through, you know, they have enough cage experience. I think young guys still need it. I think there's other top guys who still do it maybe a day or two, but they're not live sparring 3 days a week, you know, because I think the misconception is that, oh, man, they need to see it coming full speed to be prepared for it there, or they need a like live fight, you know, kind of simulation. Mm-hmm. So they that's what they do. But I think as people get smarter, as training continues to evolve in the sport, I think we'll see it less and less, maybe like one day a week or maybe three times a camp for a 6 week camp, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yep.
Now with this UFC 214 card coming up, just try to put it into perspective, because I look at it and I see one of the best fight cards I've seen maybe in years. How good is this card on paper?
It's the best card of the year, I think, and that's something, because UFC 211 was stacked as all get out. But it's the importance of the fight, man. The main event, there's just not a bigger fight in MMA right now, and putting that together is huge, you know. And then, you know, Cyborg's on it. Like I said, Aljo Barral. Man, it just kind of goes on and on, but it all focuses on this main event. It'll deliver, you know.
Yeah, and it is. It's such a good card, top to bottom. One guy I have to ask you about before we dive into the main card here, Jason Knight. We've had him on the show before, and this is a guy who's stepping up in competition to take on Ricardo Lamas. How good is Jason Knight, and what are we going to see in that fight?
Man, I'll tell you what, Jason Knight's legit, and what we see in this fight will tell exactly the proper gauge of where he's at in his career, because Ricardo Lamas is a perennial contender at 145. He's fought them all. He's beat a lot of them. And it's funny because it's not like Lamas is a gatekeeper. Lamas would be a gatekeeper to, like, the championship tier, you know, like the top five. So yeah, man, Jason Knight getting this fight, I think it's huge. Do I think he's going to have enough to get past Lamas? I don't know. Lamas is a different kind of character, man. And he's, if you look at his losses, they've only come against the top, top guys. So, these are the kind of fights I love, man. It'll show us where a guy's at, and even if Knight loses, how he performs in that loss, or if he wins, you know, that's the great stuff.
And another fight I'm curious about your thoughts on too. My co-host here, Brian, he knows Aljamain. He's interviewed Sterling a couple of times, and he's taken on the former champ Hannon Barão. Is Barão still the same guy, or is he kind of on the downward slope of his career now?
Well, we're gonna find that out too, you know. And that's the thing, is Barão moved from Nova União to up to Power MMA. Yeah, with Bader and those guys, got out of Brazil to just because, you know, they didn't think he was getting that he could get the training that he needed and the focus. So everything I've heard out of that power camp, that Barão's looking, you know, lean and mean. But here's the thing: is there's a lot of doubt, you know. I mean, but you know, he hasn't looked like the same fighter. Yes, but if you think about it, the only guy that's ever beat Barão at 35 is Dillashaw twice. Sterling knows he's got a fight on his hands, and that's why he's been kind of picking it and pushing the buttons that he has, because Aljo's a different beast, man. Like, you know, he's gonna take the fight to the ground, and Barão's good on the ground, but we've never seen anybody really put him there and keep him there. And if Aljo gets you there, you're in trouble. So I think you know, we're either going to see Aljamain become the fighter that, you know, a lot of us think he can be, or we're going to see a fighter like Brow restamp his place in the division and make another run at the title.
Yeah, I love Aljo, especially I talked with him about his story of how he was a gym class teacher, and he almost went back to that one because the UFC wasn't giving him enough fights, and now he's one of the guys people are looking at and saying, this is a guy who could also win a title at that 135 after this catchweight bout. Another guy who's seemingly come onto the scene extremely quick is Volkan Ozdemir, who we had the opportunity to talk to a couple of weeks ago. Are you surprised with his ascent as well in the light heavyweight division?
Yeah, man, and you know, I am. And like I said, with Knight and Jimmy, you mentioned earlier, like, I love when guys kind of come out of nowhere and kind of shake things up. And you know, with Manilow fight, that's a huge thing too, man, because they're kind of, those two boys are fighting for next, you know, and next isn't easy to get. But in a division that's historically been the crown jewel, if you go all the way back to the post-Tough Boom, 205 has been the crown jewel. Chuck Liddell, the Rashad, DeForest, I mean, you can just, you know, remember how the belts changed hands left and right because guys were just popping in hungry and, you know, and every title fight at 205 was something to watch. Well, now, you know, we have Jones and Cormier, and then you have, you know, the next fight up, and then you're like, well, okay, well, the winner is probably going to get it, and then you think, well, Rumble's out. There's a void there, and that's why I said about Ryan Bader. You let Ryan Bader go, Bader's a crucial cog in that wheel, you know what I mean? Because let's say there's you know, there's controversy in this, and it needs to go to a third fight, or Cormier wins, or whatever, then now who's the winner of this of the Manawa fight going to fight? You know, there's nobody. There's nobody there. So if you had Bader there, then you have that problem solved. So yeah, I love when guys come kind of out of the blue. You pronounce his name right, and I'm going to murder it. So I'm just going to say that fight. But you know, I'm not good on the pronunciation side of things.
Now the poster boy Jimmy Manoa, he is 17-2, and the only two losses that he's had have been to Gustafson and Anthony Johnson. I mean, you can't really fault a guy for losing to either one of those because they're as elite as it gets. Now, Ozdemir, he just knocked out Misha Serkinov in his last fight. So how do these two match up tonight? What happens, Dwayne? Give us a little prediction.
Oh, man, I think Jimmy's going to throw power early, and if old boy can stay away from it, then he's got a chance. The only way to beat Manoa is to kind of, you know, take him into some different waters. You know what I mean? Like, you're just not going to win it. I mean, I don't think he has the power of Rumble or he has the accuracy of Gustafson, so he's going to have to employ a different kind of game plan. And I think wear him down and hit him with some shots late. I think we see it maybe, you know, if he's going to beat him, he's going to beat him late in the second round. Manoa wins, Manoa winning in the first. So, you know, I don't ever really like to go out on fight picks because I have to deal with these guys. And they have thin skin sometimes, but you know, I can see it either way. But I would probably lead way more towards Jimmy catching him early, you know.
Okay. Yep. I think that's probably the logical assessment too. I was feeling the same thing. Ozdemir, as you were saying, Brian, he did come kind of almost out of nowhere,
right.
And now Manoa, who's been a staple there in the division for a while, this is an interesting test.
Yeah. And speaking of staples, though, the next fight on the card is just two absolute fan favorites, guys who can take punches and give them out themselves. Robbie Lawler, Donald Cowboy Cerrone, both guys love to fight. And is this one a sneaky pick for fight of the year just because the way these two guys can throw punches?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. This is when they're confident and they believe in themselves, man, there's just no stopping them. When there's a hitch in that confidence, things get weird. So both guys are coming off bad losses, knockout losses. It's a fight that's been supposed to happen for a while, so there's no lack of preparation. But we're going to find out if all those wars, you know, took Robbie, you know, took the best of what Robbie had to give. If he has anything left, we're going to see if Robbie Lawler can still be Robbie Lawler. And then, you know, we got to look at what Cowboy's done too, man. I mean, Cowboy's been so close so many times and just misstepped, you know. I mean, I got nothing but the utmost respect for the work that Donald puts in, but he's due, man. You know, I think Cowboy has the fresher legs, so to speak. I think he has the fresher chin. And you know, if you're fighting Donald Cerrone, that your chin's getting touched. You know what I mean? Because he's going to be there in your face. He's going to bring it. Now, you know, if Lawler comes out and bulldogs him the way Masvidal did, then yeah, it could be a bad night because Cowboy doesn't like to get pushed back. So if Cowboy gets pushed back, that could be bad. And I think that, you know, it comes down to the, you know, who's got the fresher chin and who can take it. And right now I just feel like, you know, Cerrone's got more in his tank. So, you know, I'm leaning towards Donald, but it wouldn't surprise me if we saw, you know, the ever-resilient, resurgent Robbie Lawler come back to life and throw some of that heat. You know, I mean, he pushes him back the way Masvidal did. There's a blueprint there. You know, the guy, look at Pettis, look at RDA, look at Masvidal. If you make him go backwards, then he's open for shots.
Yeah, and as you were saying, Brian, that very well might be fight of the night and could be fight of the year. And there's been a couple of great fights already, so make sure everyone that's listening here on the show today that you tune in next weekend at UFC 214. Let's move on to the women's featherweight division. Cyborg Christine Justino is taking on Tanya Evinger. I don't know a whole lot about Evinger, Dwayne, so what can you tell us about her and how does she match up with Cyborg?
Oh man, she's scrappy as hell, and I think that's just kind of her style. Like she fights a very similar style to Cyborg, which I think is going to be what makes it brutal. But she's tough. I mean, she comes out, she gets in your face, and she puts pressure on you. Well, that's what Chris does, you know. So I think they're going to meet in the middle. They're going to start throwing hands, and you know, I think it was pretty telling. Cyborg said, you know, told Pro Combat this week, she's like, you know, Evinger's a better fight, you know, like a better fight for the fans. And she said, I think she's brave for taking this. It's like a fighter being like, okay, well, you know, hey, this is a tough matchup. May the best woman win. Cyborg's standing there going, oh, she's brave. You know what I mean? Because she knows what's coming. So, you know, I'll tell you this. I don't see Evinger withstanding the blitz, but if Evinger can withstand the blitz and let Chris gas herself out trying to finish her, Evinger could still be, if Evinger's still standing, then we could see something special. We could see a huge upset. And I think that's the appeal of this fight. I think that's the appeal, is that she's not going to fold over the way most girls do when they get hit by Cyborg. Evinger's there to take it. She's there to give it back. She's there to fight. Fight. And that's a key word here, man. It's not like, hey, we're not here for like a mixed martial arts contest. Evinger's like, no, I'm coming to fight. And Cyborg always comes to fight. So we're going to see like Waffle House 2 in the morning, parking lot kind of fight. And that's perfect, man. Nobody does that to Chris. So can Chris handle when somebody tries to bully her back? We're about to find out. I don't think it's going to matter. I think Chris, you know, gets that 145-pound strap. But you know what's funny to me is, you know, nothing gets Jermaine Durand to me, but, you know, she couldn't fight. Oh, you know, I'm injured or blah, blah. And then now she's booked again to fight. You know, like it's the strangest thing. But that's how fierce Cyborg is. People just don't want to fight her.
No, she's terrifying. I mean, just looking at her is enough to invoke this natural human reaction of just being afraid. You know, she just looks like a scary individual.
But let me tell you this, and this is the God's honest truth. I've interviewed every fighter, you know, top to bottom from, you know, the last decade. She's the most physically intimidating individual I've ever been around. I mean, she's a sweetheart. Chris is an absolute sweetheart. Don't get me wrong, but she just, her mannerisms, her approach, her English isn't great. So like, I'm like, oh man, I don't want to miss words. I don't want to misunderstand her. You know what I mean? Like, she has a dominant presence that talk about Tyson's mystique and these things like that. Those are real. She emanates that because she has a decade plus run of destruction. I mean, she doesn't beat people. She makes them retire and rethink their place in the sport. You know what I mean? Like, it's that vicious.
So how good is she? When you think about overall picture of all of women's MMA, I mean, Ronda Rousey was the kingpin for a while, and that has changed, as we all know. Amanda Nunes is, you know, the lioness. Now she's the 135-pound champ. Is there anybody that you can think of in either the 145 or 135-pound division that can give Cyborg a legitimate test that you think would be, you know, a real threat to take her down?
No, man. Chris is the queen of women's MMA, and she's been since like 2010, since beating Carano. And I say this, man, look, you can backtrack and see the obvious trajectory of how Ronda avoided Chris, okay, in Strikeforce. She dropped down to 35 to fight Misha instead of fighting Chris. And then she went to the UFC, and then there was all that talk, and that never materialized. Now we see what happens if Ronda gets hit. That's why they avoided her. I think the only one, and we'll have to see how she gets past Shevchenko. Amanda Nunes looked like a whole different kind of monster lately. And we'll have to see how she looks against Valentina. But, I mean, do I think she could, you know, duke it out with Cyborg? No. I mean, there's a reason Chris is so dominant, man. Like, it's just, if it has to go to the ground, she's perfectly fine there. But it doesn't, because she just throws bombs, man. Like, it's power that most women don't possess. I mean, even women who spar with male counterparts, I mean, it just doesn't translate. When you get hit by Chris Cyborg, it's a different kind of thing. Like, kind of like when you hear people talk about, you know, guys who have fought Conor. Like, when you get hit with that left, it's a different situation. Like, he just hits harder. And you know, and Chris is the same way. Whatever, you know, going Ivan Drago here, you know, whatever she touches, she destroys. I mean, and we've seen it over and over and over again.
How much weight does she cut to make 145?
Oh, man, I think she walks around about 160, maybe 170. I mean, I think, and then she gets into camp that she can do it. Like, it's a gradual cut. You know, there's no massive cut with her. I think, but she has a lot of muscle mass, man. So 35, like, we see what happens if she has to get to 35 or try 35. It's just not pretty, man. So, you know, I think she's just, you know, she's 145. I don't think it's that hard for her.
Yeah, and 135. The most important thing here is fighter safety too. That's why it bothers me sometimes when I see some of these fighters really, you know, hurting their long term health, you know, by having to cut too much weight to get down to a weight class when, you know, just cut a little bit less and fight at a more normal weight class. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I do. But you know, at the same time, the argument of like more divisions, you know, I don't know, man. I'm not really big on that. I think, you know, it just kind of waters things down a little bit. If you can't make 55 and fight at 70. You know, if you can't make 70, fight at 85.
Right.
I mean, I think that's where it goes. I think it's trying to kind of gimmick the system if you're trying to be bigger and put that weight back on and those advantages. You know, I think fighting. So I think the days of extreme weight cutting are going away. And I love that. I love the move that California's making. And, you know, we've seen it with this Barao fight. That with Sterling, that they wouldn't, you know, the commission wouldn't let Barao try to cut to 35 due to his past medical history and his failure to make weight in Sacramento. So I think they're taking the lead. Say, no, man, you got to do it at 140. We're cool with 140. You make 140, cool. Then we'll talk about 35 after that. More commissions need to have that kind of stand-up, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Andy Foster and those guys, they're doing it right. You know what I mean? So hopefully they will. Other commissions will take note and be like, okay, well, cool. You didn't make weight last time. Well, we're not gonna medically clear you to try that here in our state. So, you know, if you want to fight, you got to fight at this catch. Prove that you can cut down the right way.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly, completely agree with all of that right there. Now, let's move on to the co-main event. This is going to be for the 170-pound title. The champ, Tyron Woodley, is taking on one of maybe the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners on the planet, and Damian Maia. Obviously, this is a stylistic matchup here of contrasting styles here. So, Dwayne, what are we going to see in this matchup? Me and Brian haven't given our official picks yet, but I know which way I'm going, and I know I'm not going to ask you to make a pick, but how do you see this fight kind of playing out?
You know, the thing about Tyron Woodley is I don't think he gets the respect that he deserves for the type of fighter he is. I mean, he's not just a wrestler with, you know, with a powerful right hand. He has other elements to his game, but that's the thing, is like Maia is a completely different animal. I mean, I could see this thing working out Nate Marquardt style where, you know, it's one punch and Maia gets toasted. Or, you know, I can definitely see, you know, Maia getting a hold of him. And if Maia gets a hold of you, it's this weird thing like Ben Askren kind of style that all he needs to do is get a couple fingers on you, and then, you know, he gets in closer, and then that's a weird constriction, and then he ties your legs up. You know, I think if Maia can get it to the ground, absolutely, Tyron Woodley's in huge trouble. It's getting him there, though. So, you know, Tyron's been back. He worked with Askren this whole camp. So he's been, you know, looking at that funky style of kind of trips, takedowns, knee picks, you know, ankle picks, those little weird things that Maia does that other grapplers don't do that are, you know, jiu-jitsu experts. You know, Maia does have a good blend of wrestling in there, and but I think Woodley's seen it all. So I really like it. A lot of people are like, oh, well, it's going to be a boring fight. Nah, man, you know, I love a dominant skill set. So if you're good at something, stop it. You know, like if people are like, oh, Askren fights are, are boring. Well, stop him from doing it to you then. You know what I mean? Then that's what you have to do. It's a match of skill set. So I love it stylistically. I think there's plenty of ways that Wilde can win, and I think there's plenty of ways that Maya can win. But in order for Maya to win, he has to be tired on the ground, and I think that's going to be a problem.
Well, speaking of boring fights, a lot of people did gloss that Woodley and Stephen Thompson fight, the second one, that is, as a boring one where both guys didn't really take that risk. How did you feel about that fight between those two?
Oh, yeah, man. I didn't think anything spectacular of it, but I understood. I understood why they fought that way. You know what I mean? I understood why, you know, Thompson had to stay away from his power. He knew it, but he had to kick his shots and... You know, and I talked to Steven a couple days ago, and, you know, he kind of went back through it, and he said, man, I'm not, you know, I thought I could pull the trigger quicker, and I didn't, and, you know, but I wasn't used to a guy backing up, like I didn't think he was going to back up the way he backed up. Little things like that, man, when you're fighting at the highest level, it's one little thing in a game plan can just throw everything else off. So, you know, it was chess, not checkers, and I think that's what happens with the championship tier. Sometimes the fights are lackluster. I mean, look at Davis Bader at that New York City card for Bellator, man. Like, was it an exciting fight? No, but those guys are so evenly matched that fight's going to play out exactly that way if they fought 10 more times. I mean, Phil could have easily got the win, but they're going to fight like that 10 out of 10 times. And if Woodley and Thompson fight again and again, that's what we'll see again. You know what I mean? But I just think people... You know, a little spoiled in our sport, like, oh man, we didn't see a knockout, we didn't see these things, blah blah. It's like, well, you got two highly trained guys who know exactly what moves they can't make. They're not going to make it.
Before we move on to the huge main event, I got to get your thoughts on my boy, the all-time greatest 170-pound mixed martial artist ever, George St. Pierre. How do you think that he translates to the top people in the welterweight division now at his advanced age, I guess you could say? When he comes back, if he comes back, what kind of George St. Pierre do you think we're going to see?
I think we see the same St. Pierre, man, and just like you said, I totally herald him as the pound-for-pound greatest of all time. You know, I mean, I think if you look at, you know, people forget, that's what's crazy about the sport, it's always, what have you done for me lately? People forget that St. Pierre, during his run, fought the belly. He didn't care. Whoever was next best in line, he fought. He fought the number one contender every single time. So, you know, I think nothing much has changed, and I know George is, in this time away, he's been training the entire time, and he's a perfectionist. So if you're like, okay, here's a fight, they're going to strategically, him and Faraz are going to figure out the weakness and how to exploit it. That's the thing about GSP, is you have to be able to stop him from taking away what you do best, and that's what he's always the best at, is taking away the biggest weapon. So I think he can beat either guy at the top. I think there's nobody at the top he can't beat, but at the same time, you know, how much does, you know, time away affect? But I think, you know, if he fought, The best prototype is if George St. Pierre fought either of those guys in Woodley or Maya. Look what happened when Rory McDonald fought him. Rory McDonald is kind of like 90% GSP. GSP is like, you know, just a little bit better, and I think they employ the same kind of game plan. Mm-hmm. So I think George should definitely beat him. But I don't know what's going on with him, man. It's the strangest thing with him in the UFC.
Yeah, it really is bizarre, and George has always been one of my all-time favorites, and I really don't care what anybody says about he's a boring style and this and that. To me, watching him implement what he does best and watching him dismantle every opponent fight in and fight out during his title run was unbelievably impressive, and I was always impressed by all of his performances, so I want to say that. That's not a bad GSP, right?
I'm down.
Brian's over here shaking his head. But that's not a bad GSP.
You do it when you're like reiterating, but when you had to do the improv version, it wasn't your best. You've done better. You've done much better.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. What did you think, Dwayne? It sounded like GSP, right?
Yeah, man. I'll go with it. It sounds strong.
Yeah, you're too nice, Dwayne. You're too nice.
That's what they say about me. I don't know if it's 100% true.
I'll eat some humble pie. That's fine. I'll work on it some more. Let's move on to the main event here. The former champ, what a lot of people feel, or I guess who a lot of people feel, is the best pound-for-pound fighter, regardless of what's happened in his personal and professional life. John Jones, the piece that you had on Jones was amazing. Dwayne, talk a little bit about John and the evolution of where he's been to what and what he's gone through to where he's at now, and what you expect to see on fight night.
Well, I'll tell you, the most important thing about what I've seen out of John in this past year is that he understands that words don't mean anything. Like, he can't say anything and make people believe anything. He just has to prove with his actions. And a big part of this personal evolution that I've seen out of him is not really caring what people think. It's about what he thinks and what he demands of himself and getting back to that. So, you know, that piece is like, you know, I was at the airport. I saw all that happen. The lady who approached him in that picture, she sat next to me on the flight home. We talked about it. You know, she told me what was said and all these things. And, you know, there was just a lot of disappointment. But I saw even in that, in his lowest moment, John didn't have to, like, John could have easily been like, hey, I got my kids here. I ain't got time for this. You know, you guys need to go away. He could have done that. He could have been a superstar. But he didn't, man. Like, and people come up and he was letting them, you know, just voice their disappointment. Like, oh, man, John, you know, we came out here to see you and, you know, you messed it up kind of thing, you know, and John just apologized to everybody. But he went home, and then I saw him probably 6 months after that. We were doing or 4 months after that, we were doing the Submission Underground that he was grappling Dan Anderson. So I was in Albuquerque, and it's funny because, man, with Jones, like I said, he's superstar status. He doesn't have to do anything. And we kind of had some, like, you know, not weird conversation, but it didn't really go smooth. You know, like, John just doesn't really have a lot of, you know, trust with people and for good reason. So, you know, I just told him, I was like, hey, man, look, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm just here to tell a story. And if you don't want to tell me that story, I'm all right with it. And it kind of bounced out. And I think that kind of earned his respect in a different way. So then we kind of started talking on a different level. And like I said, I've been privileged to see this thing happen. So this is what I'll tell you. This is what I know for a fact. Is John's been open to talk about, you know, he beat Cormier with, you know, half motivation and half the training camp and half blah, blah. I can tell you this, for the last, you know, 9 weeks, beating Daniel Cormier is the only thing John Jones has thought about. And that's a scary situation, because if this guy did all these other things on half motivation, then a full motivated Jones, you know, it's crazy. But Daniel Cormier is as game as they come, man. Daniel has accomplished so much, and he's such a gritty guy, and he knows that this Jones shadow is huge, man, that he needs to get through this. And if he wants to have peace of mind, then he needs to beat John and Anaheim. But I'll tell you, you know, the line that stuck out to me, it really threw me off, is John's like, you know what? He's like, you know, Dwayne, you know, Daniel and I can be friends. You know, I have no problem with Daniel after UFC 214. And I was like, oh, man, that's really big of you, John. And then he's like, but I can be friends with him if he just admits I'm the better fighter. You know, if he looks in the mirror and says, you know, man, I didn't catch this kid at the right time, and I just don't have, you know, I was like, that's cold-blooded, man. You know, but he's focused, dude. And that's the thing, is I fully expect, you know, John's tired of this narrative. You know, the other thing that he said was really poignant was, you know, I'm excited to put on a performance that makes people look forward to how bright my future is rather than focus on the darkness of my past. That's perfect. I mean, he summed it up perfect, and those are legit, genuine, sincere words. So it wasn't like pre-orchestrated sound bites or anything like that. It was a real conversation. So yeah, man, I think, you know, we're gonna see a different John Jones. I think John's gonna remind us why we all considered him the GOAT, you know, before all this happened.
Now, if John does come back and he reclaims his belt that he never lost, and he continues to go on an upward trajectory and things go well for him, would you consider him maybe going down as the best ever to do it in the whole game of mixed martial arts?
Oh, absolutely, man. I think his body of work speaks for itself. So before all this happened, that alone earned him, like, made us talk about him in that GOAT conversation. He comes back from all his adversity. Now, mind you, he just turned 30 yesterday or the day before. If he has the next 5 years of the prime. He has prime years in MMA. And in the chapter he's capable of writing, you know, win a couple, you know, here, move up to heavyweight, you know, if that's in the plans. I mean, yeah, man, we could definitely say that he's the best to ever do it. But there's a lot of things that have to happen mm-hmm. in order for that to transpire, you know. I don't know. I mean, and that's on John. John, the only person who ever beat John Jones is John Jones. So if he's got that that focus, and he has his life compartmentalized, and he continues on with the lifestyle changes that I've seen. And yeah, man, he's a bad dude.
Yeah, and you took the words right out of my mouth about, you know, if he does go up to heavyweight, that's what I'm really curious to see. That's something that I've always wondered, you know, he's pretty much cleaned out the light heavyweight division. If he does beat Cormier again, I would imagine that people want to see that rematch with Gustafsson. That was, you know, in my opinion, an unbelievably close fight and a little controversial. I thought maybe Gustafsson could have won, but again, that's you know, in the past now, but... How do you think Jones would fare at heavyweight? I mean, Stipe Miocic is a monster, and Velasquez is a stylistic nightmare for so many people. And then you got Francis Ngannou coming up, who just looks like a world beater. Does John, you know, translate to heavyweight and be just as successful as he's been at light heavyweight?
Oh, dude, the only thing that you need to put in reference is if you look on my Instagram, at Dwayne Finley, there's a picture of me talking to John, and I'm a normal-sized human being, and I'm 5'10", 215 pounds, and John looks like a completely different species, you know, compared to me. He's huge. Like, people don't understand that. Like, John at 240, 235, no problem at all. And that's the thing. It's like Stipe, he's just as tall as Stipe. He got a longer reach. He walks around the exact same weight. So they're the same size. I mean, they're in the same with Velasquez. So I think if he wanted to make that transition, he could make it. I think John could do anything that John wants to do. It's just how motivated he is. So yeah, man, we'll see. But the physicality, no problem, man. People are like, oh, John's too little. I'm like, nah, bro. John's just every bit as big as Stipe Miocic.
Oh, man, I cannot wait for this DC Jones fight and potentially if he ever does move up to the heavyweight division. I do have to ask one more question before we do let you go here at some point. With the talk of Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, the back and forth, and just the nature of their trash talk, do you feel like in the future trash talking in the mixed martial arts level is going to be needed for some of these fighters to become bigger draws than, say, they are currently?
Man, there's nothing that bugs me more, to be honest with you, because there's some people like Conor and Chael who just have it naturally, and there's other people who just don't. And to see guys that have to, like, force it, it's painful. You know, like Frankie Edgar would be the first one to say, man, like, you know, him having to try to trash talk about that, trying to get a title shot, you know, it just pained him to do it, because that's not who Frankie is, man. So, you know, I call him Frankie Scraps from Tom's River. Like, Frankie Scraps, he didn't have to talk anything. We know what Edgar does, man. So it's like, okay, but at the same time, it's also an entertainment business. What's the biggest draw? Who's this and that? You know, so I think, well, I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon, but I think fighters just need to kind of like, man, either that's who I am or who I'm not. And if I'm not that, then I gotta bring my profile up in some other way. Like, look at Cub Swanson. Cub Swanson doesn't trash talk at all, and he's a good, kind human being. But Cub's built a loyal following just on his performances alone and his, you know, his character. So, you know, I think the same with Edgar, you know, and Holloway too. Holloway, you know, threw a couple zingers at Joe, although nothing was terrible. You know, he wasn't talking the crap that Floyd and Conor were talking. So, you know, I hope it goes away, but I don't think it will.
And real quick, I just got to get your thoughts. Everyone that we've talked to is picking Floyd. They think that, you know, granted, he's one of the best ever to compete as a boxer. And Conor, this is his first real boxing match. But I've always kind of made the analogy and comparison. Like, you know, look, Conor's not coming over from water polo to fight a boxing match against one of the best to ever do it. Like, he is one of the premier combat sport athletes on the planet, you know, two belt winner in the UFC. I mean, he's as good as it gets. Having said all that, does he stand a chance against Floyd? Are we going to see Mystic Mac, his prediction come to fruition, or is Floyd just going to run circles around him?
I'll tell you what, if Conor McGregor comes over and wins this fight against Mayweather, just give the dude, like, Australia. You know, like, give him his own, like, continent. Let him be king. Let him run those things, because it's Conor's world. No, man, I think it's like this. I think what people miss in the translation is the intricacies of boxing, okay? It's not water polo over to boxing, yes, but boxing and MMA are completely different sports because the stances are different. Mm-hmm. The timing's different. You think about just the little things. Okay, you know, if Connor wants to make space or if Connor wants to, you know, catch a breath, he can tie up or he can back off and make distance. And in boxing, it's not. It's 3 minutes of, you know, movement and 3 minutes of, you know, throwing punches. The body's constantly in motion, you know, and Connor's a conditioned athlete, but I think it's pretty telling. Connor says he's going to knock him out in four, and I think that's the reason they're saying four rounds. That's what they're training for. Like, hey, look, we're going to get this dude. We're going to, because Floyd's a notoriously slow starter. They're like, we're going to get him in four rounds. Like, you know, if we don't get him in four rounds, we're in trouble. You know, and I think that's what's going to happen. I think there's going to be some exciting moments because he'll put the pressure on and he'll, you know, he'll throw some heat at Floyd. But I just think about, like, you know, guys like Canelo couldn't touch him. Guys, you know, like Pacquiao couldn't touch him. It's just a difference in speed, man. So is it possible? Yeah, sure. Anything's possible. And like I said, if he wins, give the dude a continent. I just don't think it happens. I think Floyd mm-hmm. beats him. And the reason I say that is because, look, dude, it's not a losing situation for Connor. I mean, if Connor loses this fight, he's like, yeah, it wasn't a real fight. If he comes over to MMA, I smash him, which everybody knows is true. So what do you lose in that? You don't lose in that. And then you get this huge payday. And you get to start McGregor Sports and Entertainment. You get the business you've always wanted. And I think there's the other tell that's problematic of why I'm doubting he'll come back to UFC, because Conor has his own, you know, his own promotion now, you know, with this thing. And, you know, and UFC doesn't like to co-promote. So, so yeah, we'll see. You know, but I mean, I'll be watching. I know a bunch of other people who are watching. It's a smash. I mean, it's going to do what they want it to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, win-win. And if Conor fights again, and God bless him, man, so few people get out of this thing with money in their pocket and their senses intact. If Conor can retire young, rich, and, you know, and good-looking, then thank God bless it.
Yeah, there's no way I would ever miss this huge, huge event that's going to happen next month. And, yeah, it's unbelievably polarizing. If you love combat sports, this is something that you're just salivating, waiting for it to get here. The senior editor at Flow Sports, and you've seen a lot of his work for Flow Combat, Dwayne Finley, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. You know, both Brian and myself love everything that you guys are doing at Flow, and we really hope that we can get you back on here at some point here again soon and break down another card and talk shop with you just like we did today.
Well, you guys have my number anytime, man. You guys are great, and keep up the good work with the commentating on the NEF cards. We appreciate it. And yeah, man, hit up Old Bo anytime you need me.
Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the fights this weekend and next.
You too, boys. See you guys.
Another great show in the books there. I want to thank all our guests once more. Jimmy Altera Rivera. And again, that's so hard to say. Try to say that five times fast. I think I already botched it. Altera will be fighting, of course, Thomas Almeida, UFC on Fox. That whole card gets underway at 8 p.m., so check him out and see if he can move up a little bit more on the bantamweight ranks and then get his fight with Cody Garbrandt down the line. I'd love to see that one.
I can't wait. I really hope that does happen.
Jonathan, the Junkyard Dog, Gary, talking a little WWE action for us, some NBA, and of course, also previewing what's ahead in his career as well. And I think the sky's the limit still with him, and I love the Cowboy Cerrone in him.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun, a great guy to talk to. He's very knowledgeable about all things sports, so always good to have the Junkyard Dog on the show.
Was it? And finally, that long conversation we had with the senior editor of FlowSports.com. It's Dwayne Finley, who was just such an insight to the sport. Loved how he started his career. Maybe not the traditional sense mm-hmm. of things, but I do enjoy where his story came from. And now he's one of the most premier experts in all of mixed martial arts and one of the best writers, too, out there as well.
And, you know, quite honestly, Brian, like, hearing his story too gives me a lot of hope for the future, because although you and me have the same college degree, we both went about things very differently.
Right.
You got into your career right out of college. I moved to California to pursue acting, so I didn't go the traditional route and pursuing my career, which is what I envision now and covering sports full time.
Right.
So listening to what Dwayne has done and where he's at right now, it's pretty awesome. And everything that Flow Sports puts out. Flow Combat, I get a lot of my info right from them.
Right.
They're fantastic. They're great. Him, James Lynch, Hunter Homestek, all phenomenal workers. They're very knowledgeable, and it was a pleasure to have him on today.
And we didn't get into it, but he is a Daryl from The Walking Dead. Basically, he's
Ringer?
A doppelganger. Yeah, he looks exactly like him.
I can see that. I also see a little Jeremy Renner in him. And,
a little bit, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so.
We were talking about it. It was almost like the love child between Jeremy Renner and the character of Daryl. If they had combined together, it's basically that person in Dwayne, which I think I would take as the utmost compliment.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, as Dwayne called us a couple of handsome guys, Dwayne's a handsome man himself.
Absolutely, and doing big things. And congratulations, too. I noticed they got over the 10,000 Twitter follower
mark, awesome.
And they were excited about that one. Go follow them on Twitter as well, at Flow Combat. And look forward to all the great cards they have coming up on the live telecast and just the great articles in general. We'll be keeping an eye on UFC on Fox 25. We'll be making our fight predictions for UFC 214 next week as well. And we'll see if maybe I can reclaim the belt after so many people did me wrong. Anthony Pettis being one of them. I hate you, Pettis. I hate you. And Yoel, though he may have lost, you know, it might not have been.
I don't lose, okay? I still the champion in my mind. Right? I still a champion in my mind.
I still say, had he gone about things differently, maybe he would have won. But it did bring us this point, and this is what we'll close with today. The scariest Yoel Romero. He's already a scary dude. We talked about that with Dwayne earlier, about Cyborg and how scary she is. For my money, Yoel, though he's a nice guy, is absolutely scary, and even more so after he released this Instagram video on Michael Bisping from his home country of Cuba, which he just came back to for the first time in eons. So this is what he released. This is just some of the audio, and I apologize. His first language is Spanish, so if you don't understand him, that is Yoel.
You said the media day, you come in Cuba, but you never coming. So you want it? I go. London, Manchester, whatever you want. I want to see your face in the octagon. So they have got the people chant. You need respect for my country. That is Cuba, man. Hey, Dana, give me the f***ing boy. You need respect for these people. You need respect, Cuba. You need respect, Cuba. You need respect, Cuba. This is my f***ing country. I see you wherever you want, in London, in England, wherever you want, fight with me. You need respect. I see you, sir. I see you. I see you. Where are you, man? Where are you? I wait for you here in Cuba. You say you coming here, but you never coming. You scared. You scared about me. F*** you.
Yep. That was the video he released, the actual audio from it. He is a scary man.
He is. He's terrifying.
I heard his interview, too, with Ariel Helwani on the MMA Hour, which is also a very good podcast, too, if you're looking for MMA stuff as well. Except I think sometimes it's a little bit of a track. You can break it up into multiple times a week if you wanted to. But I digress. He said he was going to go to Anaheim the next broadcast, UFC 214, mm-hmm. which Bisping's going to be a part of it for Fox. And he said he's just going to go. And Ariel was like, why? He's like, I'm going to stalk him. I'm going to be around him. I'm going to follow him everywhere he goes. Every broadcast I know he's going to be at, I'm going to be there, no matter what. And I want that fight, damn it. I'd love to see Whitaker take on Bisping to unite the titles. But if Whitaker is too banged up, give me Romero. I want to see that fight right now because that is the big money fight. Don't even put the title on the line. Don't even put the title on the line. I want to see Yoel take on Bisping because that is the fight that interests me more than any other, maybe outside of DC and Cormier.
What can I say? I mean,
oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly don't like one another. There's been a lot of trash talk. Romero is scary. Bisping is the champ. Yeah, make it happen if Whitaker can't do it.
I want to see it. I want to see it. It's so good. It is absolutely phenomenal. Just hearing that from Yoel is great.
I see you. I see you.
You do not want UL to see you because I'm sure you are going to be dead afterwards. But yeah. I digress. Again, another great show in the books, Ryan, and another great one coming around the corner as well, as we'll preview UFC 214 next time.
Yeah, we're going to have Mr. Aaron Lacy in the studio to preview that big card with us and also talk about his upcoming fight at NEF 30 Rumble in Bangor.
The Rumble in the Bangor.
So that's going to be a great show, and we have more unbelievable content coming to you on a weekly basis from the main event. So make sure you're following us on Facebook and check us out on iTunes and Podomatic.
And should we tease it a tiny bit? There's some big things coming up in the fall or the early parts of fall or the late summer. We'll be making some pretty significant announcements here on the main event, so be sure to stay tuned for that too.
Yeah, I really can't wait. The future is bright.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode number 65. We'll see you next week with the next one here. Peace.